hello again, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTGcast Network. I am Chewy.
No, you're not.
I totally am. I checked this morning. Granted, that was like 12 hours ago,
but still. I was going to say, that was a while ago. Are you sure?
I am... No, I'm not. I am moderately certain that I am Chewy, and I am joined this week by everyone's favorite goblin that... Insert joke here. Squee?
Hi, everyone. Insert response, followed by topical humor, followed by reference to trailer that we might talk about after the show.
I actually did not see the trailer. I'm also joined by everyone's favorite bow tie enthusiast and level X judge, where X equals whatever the hell the new thing is. Clues?
This might be the worst Mad Libs ever.
It's all for X. Is it on the stack? It's important.
That's a good question. Yes, it is. My judge level is, in fact, on the stack.
Oh, well, in the latest update, they moved the stack over to the left, so it's not on top of the battlefield anymore. That was a nice touch.
Wait, did they?
On Magic Duels, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. What about on MTGO?
No one cares.
Excellent.
And we are joined by a special guest this week, a reformed podcast hooligan, sort of, and current... writer for Star City Games, Chris Lansdell.
None of that matters. I feel it's very important that the listeners to this fine podcast know that you, Chewy, do not like garlic bread.
That is a good point.
I'm really not a huge fan. Like, if it's on the plate when I get my plate, I'll probably eat it. But I'm not going to be like, can I get some more of the garlic? Nah.
So if you, dear listener, know what it is that is wrong with Chewy, feel free to tweet that to @TheManipool.
I think they all know now because you just told them.
Yep, pretty much.
I mean, hey. I also don't eat eggs and I don't put milk on my cereal. There, have a field day.
Do you eat things that have eggs in them?
Wait,
like what?
Like cakes?
Yes.
Then you're fine.
Okay. Which kind of cereal? So, for instance, Golden Grahams, you can totally just eat those just straight out of the box.
I don't put milk on any cereal.
Okay.
What about not even – dude, Cinnamon Toast Crunch is crying right now. Like,
I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
You know,
you can eat that without milk.
But listen, if you've got Cinnamon Toast Crunch, you could have had Golden Grahams, and I think you should have just gone there.
At the moment, I have Cap'n Crunch that I eat out of the box with my hands.
Okay, that might be crazy talk.
Without milk.
You're entitled to your incorrect opinion.
I am, yeah. Okay, so this is actually a podcast about magic. This is episode 508, by the way.
The return of Judge Cast North.
It's actually Judge Cast North by Northwest. Wait. Northeast.
According to the history, we've had Judge Cast East on this show before, so that would be what's returning, if anything is returning.
The return of Judge Cast East.
They don't get much Easter than me in North America.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Are you a giant rabbit?
I cannot answer on the grounds that it may incriminate me.
Fair enough. Okay, then. So, it is the first week of the new standard, and the new modern, and the same old legacy, because let's be honest. So... the first big tournament was the Star City Tour, right? Is that what it's called now?
It is the tour, yes.
Yeah. Star City Tour.
It's the Star City Open Weekend. There we go. In Baltimore.
Much like the Donald Trump rally.
We're just going to move from there, sure.
I'm pretty sure there was less...
Successful white humans.
I'm pretty sure there was a lot less bigotry.
That was way too forced to acknowledge.
That was...
Oh, that was awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Chris Lentz. Have we met at all?
I'm going to go with, I hope not.
Unfortunately. So, yeah, there were... How many people showed up? 624 people there to play the new standard.
Well, that's not an insubstantial amount of people.
That is
welcome to new standard. We haven't had a Pro Tour yet. Enjoy.
Pretty much. And it was won by Star City's own Jim Davis. I don't know if he's actually Star City's own, but he's there all the time, so.
He writes for us.
See? Them.
So yes, they own him. All right. running Bant Company, which is rocking the collected company, of course, which is totally still a deck. And I really appreciate the fact that this deck is loaded with old creatures, new creatures, and for the first time ever, a 5-mana creature, asterisk, that's probably been done before.
So, those of you who are slightly more budget conscious will be very happy to hear that Jim Davis said multiple times that Jace was the worst card in his deck.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
So if you have Jaces and want to run this and would like to get rid of them, I will accept them.
Now, this is, of course, Jace Vryn's Prodigy, also known as Flippy Jace, who's technically a Transform Jace, but look, it sounds funnier that way.
Yeah, Transformy Jace didn't really roll off the tongue.
He was more than meets the eye, but less than
I could also just call him Creature Jace if you really want to.
That's silly.
Can I call him Jerkface?
That I mean, you can, but then you won't be able to differentiate from the other Jace.
Yeah, that doesn't narrow it down.
You're that's right. What Jace is short for. You just take the irk out of the middle and you have.
All right, write that down. Take the irk out of the middle.
Yep, take jerk out of the middle. That is the possible show title. Okay.
Jerkfa.
Irkfa, because you got to leave the J. Anyway, so yeah, this deck is running the Duskwatch Recruiter, which, okay, I've already found the first thing I don't like about Star City setup here.
The fact that you can't flip it without opening it?
Yeah, you can't see the backside unless you actually open the card, because I don't remember this.
On the other side, mixed things cost one less. And
backside. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Clues, you are not allowed to drink margaritas before the show anymore.
Right.
Wait. Yeah, okay.
What about during?
During is definitely not allowed. So on the front side is a 2-2 that for 2 and a green, look at the top 3 cards of your library, reveal a creature, put it into your hand, and the rest go on the bottom. And then he's a werewolf, and he transforms into creature spells you cast cost one less to cast. Wow, that's... Huh.
Pretty good in the stack, huh?
It's pretty good for uncommon, too.
It's very cleverly constructed, because you play this on turn 2, and then on turn 3, I have 3 mana. I could spend that to cast a spell, but I could also spend it to draw a card, and oh, I have no mana to cast spells now. If only there was something that I had on my battlefield that didn't want me to cast spells. Oh, look! God, isn't that convenient?
And then if he survives the turn, then you can play stuff cheaper, including, hopefully, that thing that you just drew. Seems good.
Well, right?
And this is also a deck that can act, if it starts running low on gas, meaning it only has 2 cards, well, it can cast 2 things in 1 turn, because they're cheap. Flip and back, gets more cards, life continues.
You've also got Tireless Tracker to keep you fueled with tokens that are clue. That no, I can't say it. I'm going to be calling clues a lot this show, aren't I?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You get to sacrifice clues a lot.
No.
I mean,
get over it.
But I don't want to go in the graveyard.
It doesn't matter what you want. It's for the greater good.
Fortunately, you're a token, so you won't be there long.
Wait, greater good's not in this deck.
Correct.
Is it not? Never mind. But yeah, Tireless Tracker, when you sacrifice a clue, he gets bigger, and he makes clues, so seems good.
He's very, that card went from $2 to $8 over the weekend because of this tournament.
Good God.
That card beat the crap out of me in the pre-release, too. It's exactly as good as it looks.
And it's also a 3-mana 3-2, so Collected Company just loves it.
At least when it starts, yeah.
And then there is Archangel Avacyn, because you just have to play her.
Like, she's going to show up in a few other decks.
Fire fixes everything.
Yes. She likes to be rendered by volleys, I hear. Now,
I don't know if she likes it, but I haven't.
There's a card in the sideboard, though, that nobody really thought would see any play, but it's a 2 of here.
Would that be
is it the Invocation of Saint Draft?
It really is.
All right. Somebody mute your phone. So,
the Invocation of Saint Draft is actually interesting here. Typically, you'd run this in a deck that has a fair number of evasion options, but the only evasion in here is Avacyn, in which case you're already having a great time, and the Singleton Den Protector, unless I missed something.
It's actually for the ramp matchup where they don't have very many early plays.
So it's just to have something to do?
Well, yes, like hit them in the face for 4 every turn. That's a pretty good way to spend your time.
Yeah, but these are tiny creatures. They just get, killed. So you get 4 damage in once.
No, the ramp matchup, though, doesn't do anything until, like, turn 5 or 6, by which point you've already hit them for 12.
How are they still alive in standard?
Do you have things
Is new standard that slow?
Yeah, no.
Because the next deck is not that slow.
That's true, but Kozilek's Return is a card. They have things like Jadi Offshoot as well to block with. But if you are running a 2-2 into Jadi Offshoot every turn, you don't really care because you're also smacking them in the face.
Yeah, that seems fine. I will take
that's
every
totally
day.
Fine. It's just seems interesting. Like, you could also just run a flyer.
Sure. It's just hilarious that it's in the sideboard and nobody really expected it to see play at all. One thing that did come up with this deck is in the finals against the super white, super fast white aggro, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in a minute. Lantern Scout got brought in off a collected company. Sylvan Advocate's an ally.
Oh, it is.
So when he played a Sylvan Advocate next turn and his entire team got lifelink, it was kind of surprising to a lot of people.
Including his opponent, I'm sure. Buh. Yeah, the Lantern Scout on the board is a nice touch. Because, remember, Rally, unlike the old allies, Rally gives all of your creatures lifelink when an ally hits the battlefield. So
yeah.
It doesn't matter that the Tireless Tracker is the only one, or not the Tireless Tracker, rather, the Sylvan Advocate is the only other one, because you only need to give your whole team lifelink once, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Also, there's a lot of hidden card draw in this deck for a blue-white, for a bad deck. I mean, you've got Nissa draws you cards. Jace isn't really hidden. Tireless Tracker draws you cards. Duskwatch Recruiter draws you cards. Den Protector kind of draws you cards. Ojutai's Command. Lots of ways to put cards in your hand.
How were the new lands? I see he's running one Fortified Village and one Port Town.
Sounds about right.
He didn't have any mana problems on camera that I saw. Now, he could have had them off camera. Other people were running this deck. There were three of them in the top 12 running the same list that may have had more mana problems than Jim did. But it did seem like three colors is probably straining the bounds of what you can do in this format. And you probably want green in those three.
Yeah, like blue is the lightest of these.
Well, blue is mainly there because Reflective Mage is not a reasonable magic card.
Well, I mean, it's there for that in Jace, but...
That's also not really a reasonable magic card.
They're blue cards, yes.
Yeah.
But just in general, I'm not surprised, because if you look at what we actually still have, the Fortified Villages and the like, all of the very new ones, which require you to reveal a forest or plains in this case, or it'll come in tapped, get really, really bad as the game goes on, because you're just not going to have as many of those around. And if you top deck it, well, it's even worse than normal land. So you don't want to load up heavily on them, especially if you're also running things like your Canopy Vistas and the like, which want you to already have those basic lands out.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, they're much better early game, though, than the battle lands.
Well, yeah, they're fast lands. They're like the fast lands from Scars of Mirrodin, only with a variable element to them.
Yeah. The second place deck is something we haven't seen in a very long time.
White Weenie.
Yep.
It has been a while.
That dribbling sound you hear is Craig Wesco going, oh, oh, oh.
I thought I recognized that sound. Craig Wesco is well known for playing a White Weenie deck, even when it's not viable. And then he shows up in the top eight and you're like, what are you doing here?
He knows what he's doing.
That's very true. Yeah, I got a, hang on, let me pull it up. I got a message. So today I was driving all day, but I got a message, from, Stark that said, quote, a full half of SCG Baltimore Standard's top eight were human tribal decks. Standard is broken. This human menace must be stopped. Ban Thalia's Lieutenant. And I was like, that's pretty funny. And then I read Thalia's Lieutenant and I went, wow, no wonder there were so many human decks.
Yeah. It's a really good card.
Well, the thing, nobody really called this one out of the gate. It wasn't expensive on pre-orders. It wasn't even expensive till this morning, period. But the card is just basically better than Champion of the Parish.
And that's impressive, because that card was really good.
I play it in Modern. I'll be playing Thalia's Lieutenant now. But...
So Thalia's Lieutenant, just because it's new, for one and a white, it's a 1/1 human soldier that says, when it enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each other human you control. That's pretty good. But then when another human enters the battlefield under your control, you put a +1/+1 counter on the lieutenant.
So I get to do both?
Yeah, so the lieutenant shows up
and
makes...
It's important to get a lot of action out of your 2-mana curve topper.
Yeah.
So,
because we're in White Weenie, friends.
Sir, there are three drops in this deck, sir.
They are not your curve toppers.
Gonna need you to look at those.
I'll your curve topper is playing two of these on turn four and killing them.
I accept your terms. I'm loving the fact that not only are there three dragon hunters in here to block Dragon Lord Ojutai ad infinitum, but there's also two expedition envoys, because why the heck not?
Yeah, because Savannah Lions used to be like an actual powerhouse.
Well, your Kithian is still legendary, so you need to mix it up a little bit with your expedition envoys.
I didn't even see Kithian. Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's how we got here.
Without looking, what does that card do on the other side?
Things, and also stuff.
I believe
it does all the Gideon
stuff,
things that he normally does. But except for the really good one that he's not allowed to do anymore.
Which is?
Making things attack him?
Oh, he does that, actually.
Not the old effective way, but it still happens. And making things indestructible is still a thing. And I'm pretty sure, as always, he turns into a dude, but I don't remember how big of a dude.
Oh, he's a 4/4.
Yeah,
I respect that for white mana.
In your white weenie deck? Yeah, that's probably okay.
Yeah, it seems fun.
It's about on curve.
So yeah, it's running things like Consul's Lieutenant, which I always thought was really powerful and just didn't have a deck to live in.
Oh, and he's even a human when you do that. And then if you play Thalia's Lieutenant, you can give him a +1/+1 counter in addition to his loyalty counters.
Who, Gideon?
Because confusing.
Yay! Lots of counters.
He is a human soldier. Oh my god.
Yeah!
That's funny.
5/5!
So, okay, no, let me find the deck.
There's the other Gideon ever. So except the one that became a 6/6.
Consul's Lieutenant is the one that has renown, and if it's renowned, it gives all of your other dudes +1/+1.
When it attacks,
yeah, which is great. The Expedition Envoy, the Henwyr Militia Captain. I have to flip him over. Hang on. Flips into the thing with power and toughness equal to the number of creatures you control, and it spits out human clerics. Right.
Okay.
No more humans.
Okay, Chris.
Yes,
Chris.
Sir.
Let's say that I have a Kithian out. And
you
my
have Kithian out.
My Kithian has been transformed into his other side, into Gideon Battleforged.
Yes.
I activate his zero ability, and I turn him into a human soldier creature.
Yes.
And then I cast Moon Mist.
Yes.
Now what happens?
He transforms back into Kithian, Hero of Acro. But he keeps his loyalty counters.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. And if I've played Athalia's Lieutenant, he's got a +1/+1 counter as well.
Yes.
Great. Let's do this on camera. Make it happen, someone.
In Modern.
No, legacy.
That's also a legal play. One thing that was notable in this deck, there's only one in the main deck, two in the sideboard, and then there's a few in some other decks. Westvale Abbey didn't do as much on camera as it was predicted to do. It may have done more off camera, but the whole 9/7 beat stick that will kill everyone and everything forever didn't really materialize. There was one game where it transformed and literally could not attack because it would have just run into something and done nothing and it would have died on the backswing.
Hmm.
And there was another game
that's
where
that's impressive with 9 points of lifelink.
Yeah, I think it was a case of block, sacrifice my blocker, kill you.
That'll do it, yeah.
I mean, I've won games doing that. It's always hilarious.
So to finish off this deck, it's also running Knight of the White Orchid because white weenie and it's sort of required.
And it also has 20 lands, so chances are it's going to find you a land.
That's true. Thraben Inspector, who is fairly sick for a one drop.
So I believe you have misquoted that gentleman's name. What? His name is Inspector Gadget.
Da-na-na-na-na. Inspector Thraben. Town Gossip Monger, which it looks a little odd. It's a 1/1 for one that you tap it and an untapped creature you control to transform it. It transforms into the Incited Rabble, which is a 2/3 that attacks each turn, each combat if able, and has colorless fire breathing for 2 mana for +1/+0.
And a red color indicator, technically a Boros deck.
He goes in the corner.
Oh. It's a Madu deck Westvale Abbey turns into Ormondal, which is black.
It's Abzan.
What? No, no green.
Everything is Abzan.
Oh, I forgot everything is Abzan, right.
Yes. Everything is awesome.
No, no, everything is Abzan.
There's full Siege Rhino in here somewhere, isn't there?
Oh.
They're in the
book. Not anymore, there's not.
Not in this format.
So
Dr. CJ Reinowski has left us.
For spells, we have Declaration in Stone.
Because obviously.
Which is just, you know, 2-mana removal. Seems good.
I mean, you let them get clue tokens. What are they whining about?
I'm going to guess blue if it's a clues token.
Probably.
No? 2-meta? Okay, never mind.
Yeah. Stasis Snare because more removal. Griff's Boon.
Because red versus blue.
Because giant flying swan horse.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's a one cost aura that pumps your dude and gives it evasion. In White Weenie, sometimes that's all you need is those last couple points of damage.
Plus it comes back from the graveyard and it has a giant flying swan horse.
It, definitely the giant flying swan horse. And then always watching because all of your dudes are non-tokens other than the clerics that the transformed handwear militia captain spits out, right? That's it. Everything else
also,
is...
Also, Westvale Abbey makes tokens, but yes.
Oh, right. Okay, there we go. I knew there was something else.
I saw someone somewhere on the internet be pissed that always watching was not called tangible virtue. And that made me laugh.
That is pretty funny. Well, if they called it tangible virtue, they'd have to ban it and block constructed, so.
Oh.
Only if they had another card called Fleeting Souls, which made human tokens.
They've never printed those before.
So, yeah, it's just super aggro. I mean, let's see.
Cubs.
Two drop, one drop, two drop, two drop, two drop, one drop, one drop, one drop. Like,
I told you it was a curve topper and yeah. I meant it.
He wasn't playing when he said curve tops at two. Of course, always watching costs three, but eh.
So the point of the two drops is you play two of them on turn four after you've played the always watching, and now you've just got super crazy death fight for the last turn.
Pretty much.
Except that it's your opponent's death, not yours.
Do you like lunch? Because this deck will let you get lunch.
That is important.
However, you won't have any money because it's going to take your lunch money.
What a jerk.
So Eric Himmel, I think his name was pronounced in third place with this white-black open inverted commas Eldrazi close inverted commas deck was my favorite deck, well, second favorite, and we'll get to that in a minute, that I saw on camera all weekend. Mainly because it did hideous things with Eldrazi Displacer and Archangel Avacyn.
That makes perfect sense, yeah.
All of my things are indestructible. All of my things are indestructible again. Hey, guess what? You know my things? Yeah, they're indestructible. Remember that time my things were killable? No, me neither.
Not anymore, yeah.
By the way, the Mono White Humans deck was Kellen Pastor. I think we forgot to mention that.
Yes. Eric Himmel also transformed his Archangel Avacyn with the trigger on the stack, flashed in Archangel Avacyn, so he had one on each side on the board, made his entire team indestructible, blew up his opponent's team, and then the next turn blinked the red one to turn it back into the white one. Because reasons. Because
she's so crazy she has to fight herself?
Yeah, exactly.
Huh.
Yeah, I do hope one of them was sacrificed to Eile.
This deck does stupid things. Like all of the creatures like to be blinked with the exception of Hedron Crawler, who is pretty indifferent to it, really.
Oh, but he's so cute. Look at him.
He's such a cutie.
You gotta pay for that blink somehow.
God help you if you step on one.
I bet that's worse than stepping on a Lego barefoot.
Exactly.
In the middle of the
yeah.
I'm pretty sure those things were in the Sonic the Hedgehog games.
I think they were. So the Displacer is the White Eldrazi, remember, that blinks things. And he's running Knight of the White Orchid. That seems good. Matter Reshaper. That actually doesn't matter, but it's just a good card.
It just reshapes.
Yeah. Thought Not Seer. That's important.
Thought Not.
He has a giant eye. Of course he likes being blinked.
Wow. And then Avacyn, of course. And he's also running two Gideon Ally of Zendikar, you know, the good one, and two of brand new Sorin, Grim Nemesis. That's not hard to say at all. Grim Nemesis.
Well, all weekend, Craig Kremples was saying White of the Night Orchid, so he apparently has trouble with
and White of the Night Orchid, yeah, that seems good. Wait.
This is pretty straightforward white-black super mid-range, right?
White-black good cards, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got Anguished Unmaking, because if you're playing white-black, why would you not be playing Anguished Unmaking? And then Ultimate Price and Declaration in Stone. All of its spells are just straight removal. Just, could you get rid of that, please? Thank you for that.
Yay, good cards.
Yeah, this is really, I like, yeah, I do like that it's white-black Eldrazi, and there are a total of 4, 5, 9 Eldrazis in the main. Which I guess is more than I thought.
Before and then I counted it. Two more in the sideboard only?
Yeah, there's Reality Smashers in the board.
There's a whole bunch of cards, like, remember that Tragic Arrogance is in standard? Because I didn't.
I did remember. But it's also something that we haven't seen as much exploitation of lately, so it's...
Pepperidge Farm also remembers.
It remembers a lot of things. Though in this deck it seems kind of weird, because you might actually have a few creatures out.
Yeah.
For like, getting one. To keep your Hedron Crawler isn't quite as exciting when you're sacking two or three other guys.
Yes. What's... Yeah, I really enjoyed watching this deck just do value things.
What's the Battlefield Forge for?
Just another form of colorless mana that enters the battlefield untapped.
Oh, okay. That can also tap for white in case you want it. Got it.
Is it the same deal with Foundry?
Foundry makes flying creatures which can be relevant.
Well, I mean, yeah, but like it doesn't have super synergy. It's just yay flyers.
Yay yeah. flyers, yay colorless mana.
Yeah, it's essentially a waste with late game upside.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's what I figure.
Thank you for pointing out the colorless thing, which I... forgot was a thing. Like, oh yeah, all of these make no, they don't actually. Whoops. What makes colorless? It's got Battlefield, it's got the Hadron Crawlers, Battlefield Forge, Blighted Fen, Cave of Koilos, and the Foundry of the consoles. Wow, that's it.
Yeah, but the only thing you actually need colorless for in the main deck is Thought Not Seer and Blinking with the Displacer.
Well, the Blinking with the Displacer is important, so.
And yeah. The Matter Reshaper.
Oh, yeah, there's that guy.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him. But he's a one-off, so.
Yeah.
You do draw a few cards. You've got, you know, a good way to churn through your deck. So I don't think it's going to be an issue.
This deck is cool.
Churn.
No, the next deck is cool.
Oh, we're not there yet. Okay, now we are. So next play is Todd Anderson playing Blue-Red Control. Oh, I heard about this.
Oh, you lost me at blue.
No, that's no, okay. No. He's about to get you back.
Yeah, it's,
I don't know. Look, there's four Jaces in this.
Yeah, but look above that.
Yeah.
So he's running.
First he put a thing in the ice, and then he took the thing out of the ice, and then he hit people with it.
Yeah, he's running four thing in the ice. Which, in case you're going, so, this is the thing that transforms into a 7-8 that bounces all the non-horror creatures. I would like to point out that both sides of thing in the ice are horror creatures, so it doesn't actually matter. How many you play.
Except when you hit them for 21 out of nowhere.
There is that. That sounded painful. Is everyone okay?
That was a very well-dropped mic.
Wait, how do you hit them for 21 out of nowhere?
With three things in the ice.
Okay, but you get them all to transform simultaneously?
It doesn't matter. They don't bounce each other. They're horrors on both sides.
Oh, okay. See, but you said hit them out of nowhere. I was imagining I have three O4s, and then somehow I transform all of them and flip them.
Actually, I was looking for the trick to flip them, and I'm like, I don't see it.
No, there's a lot of instants in the deck.
Well, obviously.
So you can and you can pass the turn with three counters on each of your three things in the ice, and then and at their end step, cast three instants, untap, and kill them.
Sounds exciting.
The deck is not a thing in the ice deck. The deck actually hinges around another card under the spells column. Pyromancer's Goggles.
Wait, really?
This goggles, is why we were saying you were going to like this one, Clues.
They do something.
Wait, what?
Yes, sir.
As a reminder for those who don't remember, Pyromancer's Goggles cost 5, legendary artifact, even though it's running 3 of them. Tapped out a red, which is cool. When that mana is spent to cast a red instant or sorcery spell, copy that spell and you may choose new targets for the copy. Hey look, spells are happening.
Yeah.
Spells like Lightning Axe.
Oh god, that looks great.
No, Fall of the Titans is the killer here.
Yeah, Fall of the Titans is the important one.
because he was going things like Lightning Axe, discarding Fiery Temper, then blowing up like two things, then tapping six mana and including Pyromancer's Goggles to do four copies of Fall of the Titans, essentially. So you get hit for 10 and two of your creatures get hit for 5 each. Oh, and also hit you with this thing in the ice.
Wow.
Wait, how do you make four copies?
Well, Fall of the Titans targets two things.
Oh, okay, now I'm seeing it. Right, right, right. But you said four copies, so I was like, but that doesn't work. I get it. Right.
Oh, it was four units of 5 damage.
Right, right. It was Lansdale wording things poorly.
Yeah, you gotta run it through the Lansdale filter, and then everything's fine.
It's the new computer. I don't have the Lansdale filter installed yet.
Oh, yeah, you should totally get that.
Another key thing that this deck is running is Jory N. Ruin Diver. You remember him?
Oh, yeah. He of the beautiful Game Day full-out promo.
Fish Wizard. Yeah.
Fish Wizard.
Yeah, dude, when you cast your second spell each turn, draw a card. Looks like this deck does that pretty regularly. Because it's running Anticipate, it's running Magmetic Insight, and it's running Tormenting Voice. So it's got lots of things that you just cast anyway.
So things like discarding a Drownyard Temple to a Magmetic Insight cast with a Goggles. So discard a land, draw 4 cards, pay 3 mana, return the Drownyard Temple to the battlefield tapped. I would like some value with my value, please, sir.
Maybe some more value?
Well, just discarding that Fiery Temper to anything seems like value.
You mean to Chandra Flamecaller?
Also a thing you can do.
Yeah, so you guys, listeners will remember, several weeks ago we had Mike from At Your Instep on, and we asked him, how often do you use the zero ability on Chandra Flamecaller? And he said something to the effect of, I have never seen that done, ever. And we were like, right! Now it seems like it might be a thing that you see once in a while.
Oh, yes.
Because now there's madness and graveyard shenanigans.
Hey, discard 2 Fiery Temper, pay red red. Oh boy, get some cards and you're dying. You know what the red deck wanted to do.
Draw more cards while killing you? That sounds right, yeah.
Well, also, the blue card comes in.
I didn't realize that Fiery Temper was a blue card, actually. It's deal 3 damage, draw a card for 1 mana. I accept your terms.
That's red blue like crazy.
So yeah, this deck is pretty cool. I must say.
Do you see the 4 of red blue enchantment in the sideboard?
No. Oh.
Fevered Visions. That's a new one. 1 of red and a blue enchantment. At the beginning of each player's end step, that player draws a card. Yay! If that player is your opponent and has 4 or more cards in their hand, Fevered Visions deals 2 damage to him or her. Ow.
So it fixes, I think we mentioned this on the mana pool, it fixes the age-old problem with Howling Mine effects, which is your opponent gets the card first.
Mm.
But now you get the card first, so if they blow it up, you're like, all right, it's no longer draw this card. Hey, thanks, kill that before you can draw something. And it's got the added bonus of it might be, you know, a rack. No, not a rack. A vise. And just ping them for some damage while they're at it.
And the extra bonus here is that if you actually have multiple of them out, they both become more effective. Because it's that much harder for them to get all those cards out of their hand each turn as they're now taking 4, possibly 6 or 8 damage.
That is pretty funny.
Hey, you're giving them a card, so you're generous.
How magnanimous of you. I also really like the 4 of Eldrazi Obligator.
He actually said in an interview that he expected way more ramp, which is why that card was there. And most of the time, he wished it was literally any other card.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those metagame calls that had the meta gone that way, he would have looked like a genius.
That's how you find out.
Yeah, and then sometimes it doesn't, and you're like, well, I have an 11-card sideboard. That sucks.
I've been there.
But that's legal now, so it's fine. You can have an 11-card sideboard.
You said?
Yeah.
There's not really anything else terribly interesting in the top 25. There was a Jund mid-range deck that ran the frog.
All right, hang on there.
Did we literally get to fourth place and then you're just like, eh, nothing else?
Well, everything else is humans.
Yeah, but you can still call out the people that played them.
They're Chris, do you hate people? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I kind of do.
Okay, that's fair.
They also don't all have the same cards in them.
That's true. So in fifth place.
Look at the fifth place, yeah.
Blake Conte is playing a white-black. It's not really a human deck. It's a white-black mid-range deck. This isn't even humans. So it's got, it's got Wasteland Strangler. What is fueling the Wasteland Strangler? Oh, Stasis Snare, Silk Wrap.
Anguished
Unmaking, Declaration in Stone.
Best of Mind.
It's gonna work.
So, the deck.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Answer is,
look,
the deck.
I hadn't made it over there yet, shut up. But yeah, okay, so this deck is running Knight of the White Orchid, the Wasteland Strangler, which you'll recall is the processor that does give something -3/-3 until end of turn. Archangel Avacyn, because white-black. Aelie Eternal Pilgrim, because white-black. And Linvala the Preserver. Ooh. Wonder how she worked for him.
The most timely of reinforcements.
That's a good way to put it. And he's running, look at all these... Bulk Planesers. There's three Gideon, two Kool-Aid Man, Obnixilus, and two of New Sorin. Wait, is there another Sorin in Standard, or did he rotate? He was in Cons, right?
Yeah.
So he rotated.
Yeah, he just left.
Okay, so this is the only Sorin in Standard. Excellent.
Disgruntled, disappointed dad Sorin.
There you go. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
He's just anguished.
Oh, I see what you did there. And then the rest of the deck is removal, secure the wastes, and removal. Oh, and transgress the mind. Hey, Clues, did you look at transgress the mind?
No.
Okay, just checking.
I mean, it could be worse. It could be skin invasion.
I hate you all.
I haven't made you uncomfortable yet. By the way, have you checked your mail for a playmat yet?
No.
Good, because I don't know where you live.
Speaking of playmat... Random aside, Richard Kane Ferguson is going to be at GP Charlotte selling playmats, possibly of Pillage.
Oh, nice. I forgot he was going to be in Charlotte. That's going to be cool.
That's why I'm going to Charlotte, Chewy.
Excellent. Screw you too, by the way.
I mean, seeing you is cool and all, but...
I'm not Richard Kane Ferguson, I'll give you that.
True, I've seen you.
Yeah. Have you ever seen me and Richard Kane Ferguson in the same room? I don't know. You might have. I don't know how many other GPs.
Not to his knowledge.
Anyway, so this deck.
A little uncomfortable.
It's all kinds of, it's just mid-rangey stuff, like we said. Everything is very valuable as far as value, not like money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd wager based on her appearances here, Avacyn's probably doing pretty good for herself right now.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, look at Colin Stiles there with white-blue humans.
White-blue humans.
Yeah, Avacyn's rocking like $30 to $40 right now. She's doing
colloidal silver?
What?
Because see, they're blue humans.
So. Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah, see what I did there? No? Okay.
Wow.
Never mind.
Read a book!
So, what is going on in this deck? It's
Captain O.J. Readmore?
So it's a combination of... The White Weenie deck we saw before, because it's got Consul's Lieutenant, Knight of the White Orchid, Thalia's Lieutenant, Thraben Inspector, and Kithian. But then it pulls it back. It's not all hardcore 1 and 2 drops, because it's running Archangel of Tithes, and it's running Reflector Mage, because what did you say about Reflector Mage earlier? It's
not a reasonable magic.
Yeah, there we go. It's not a reasonable magic. I like that. That's a good term. And then, because it's white-blue, it's running Dragonlord Ojutai, because why not? And there's Avacyn.
So, just to save you some time, the 7th place list by Christopher Giuliano, literally the only difference is that he has 1 Avacyn and 3 Ojutai, instead of 2 and 2.
Well, look at that. Yeah, Christopher Giuliano is running a very similar list.
I can respect it's that.
Literally... That's the only difference. And in fact, the extra Avacyn is in the sideboard instead of the Ojutai, so.
Oh, there you go.
So the same 75, just slightly different starting configuration.
Do we think maybe they work together on these decks?
Let's hope so.
No.
Sorry, not at all. So yeah, it's got the white it's got the aggressive start, but then it's got more, how do we put this?
Staying power.
There you go. That's a good way to put it. Cause Archangel of Tithes just makes, especially if you can get it down against something that's, more aggressive, it just sort of makes them go,
Well, it's interesting that the mono white deck, that's too expensive, but the slightly slower deck can totally fit one white, because we're not in this crazy four mana deck nonsense anymore.
Four also, color.
The important thing about both Archangel of Tithes and Dragonlord Ojutai is they really like to always be watching.
Oh, straight up, yeah. Because when Ojutai has Vigilance, he's just brutal. At least every once in a while, you know, maybe you could swing high and since speed. No, not anymore. Sorry.
Well, that's why people are running Bad Plummet.
Bad Plummet is pretty good against that. Yeah.
It's Clip Wings for anyone who hasn't heard it called that yet. Which was in a number of the early deck sideboards, all the green ones.
Yeah. Well, the main thing it was there for was Ormondal, but it does a nice job against Avacyn and Ojutai as well.
I am noticing like one and two of Westvale Abbeys in a bunch of these decks. Yeah. Is it as a just in case sort of thing?
It's something to do with your mana.
Yeah, and it's a freebie, right? Like most two color decks are heavily one color, splashing a second, so they can afford to play one or two colorless lands. So why not play a land that essentially can win you the game on its own?
I mean, at the very least, it's something like, oh, let's just have some tokens. Like, it's really good in a slowdown strategy.
Yeah. All right, then.
Good card is good.
So that's, what was that, 6th and 7th?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right, so the top 8 is rounded out by Dwayne Graham, who is running white-green humans.
What?
Who is running, let's see, Archangel of Tides, Consul's Lieutenant, Dragon Hunter, there he is. Knight of the White Orchidalia's Lieutenant, Thraben Inspector, Tireless Tracker, there's the difference.
There's the green.
Yeah. The green is there for Tireless Tracker, which seems good.
Yeah, it's the only green in the main.
They just leave the clues there to refuel after you sweep the board. So that, I mean, anyone who's played aggro will tell you there's nothing worse than a board sweeper when you have an empty hand.
Yeah.
Because then you untap and they go something like Obnixilus, and you're like, well, I can't ever win.
Pretty much.
If you have three or four clues on the board, they sweep your board, then you untap and draw four cards, and you're right back in the money.
Yep, so it's just that and the Archangel of Tides is just more staying power. It's weird how much of this is the same basic shell. I wonder how long this shell will last.
I think we'll see a lot of Radiant Flames next week.
That makes sense. Let's see.
I'm entertained by the eerie interludes that are in the sideboard too.
Yeah, I was just looking at those.
Eerie Interlude is another way to dodge sweepers.
Yeah.
Hey, when's the Pro Tour?
Week after next.
Okay, so the 23rd and 22nd, 23rd, 24th, does that sound right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, because next week all the GPs are limited. And then 2 weeks after that we have our first standard GP, which means the Pro Tour is probably before that. So yeah, okay. Nice. Sorry, I pulled up the schedule just because I was curious. I mean, I keep saying, and I don't mean to throw off on the people who play in the Star City event, but as far as deck building goes, you just see more innovation and whatnot at GPs than you do in the Star City events.
I mean, definitely more at the Pro Tour. The early Star City events, a lot of the pros tune in to get a baseline view of where the format is, because the majority of people at a Pro Tour are still people who qualified through things like pre-TQs and lucking into a good finish at a GP. You know, most people are not full-time pros, so they need to get an idea of what everyone else is playing so they have a baseline for where to brew the format.
Right.
Innovation at GPs tends to be only early in the season, sadly. Or if Brad Nelson is playing.
This is just anecdotal. But looking at top 8s from every event, every week, it's just the Star City events are usually just more of the same, more of the same, more of the same, until something happens on the GP circuit, and then it starts popping up in the Star City open top eights. So that's just something I've noticed over the years. But of course, the Pro Tour is obviously where all the insanity happens, and this Pro Tour is standard because, thank goodness, they only managed to screw up one with Modern. Did I say that out loud?
No.
I have.
Your microphone's really good, though.
Okay, well, what else do we have? So let's just bounce through. We've got more white-blue humans, more Bant Company, more white-green humans, white-black Eldrazi. Is this the same deck as before? Yes, it is. As for dragons, Aliantrazi, do you just never learn?
Oh.
he copied the idea from Shaheen Sovani, so that's even more of a no, he never learns.
It's the Esper dragons that we know with different removal and a new Sorin.
That is completely accurate. Straight up, that is exactly what this deck is. It's just running Sorin, and it's running Anguished Unmaking.
Yeah.
Ding. So that deck survived a good chunk of the rotation, that's the word.
Yeah.
Daryl Donaldson in 22nd place had a very interesting deck.
Wait a minute, we're not there yet.
Ooh, I like how it starts.
Jund midrange. Goblin Dark Dwellers. That's always fun. Sylvan Advocate, Tireless Tracker, Kalitas. There he is. Been wondering where he's been. Mina and Den Wildborn, really? Oh, this is the Gitrog Monster deck. Yeah, I heard about this.
Froggy.
Gotta love the Gitfrog's monster.
Or the Gitgood monster, or the Gitwrecked monster, or any other number of inanities that you wish to call it. Also, Arlincourt is in this deck.
Oh, hey, excellent.
Oh, look at that. Three of her. Wow.
Well, the first thing I thought when I saw the Froggy was that we have that and Mina and Den. Surely we can do something with all those extra land drops. And it turns out, hey, Tireless Tracker's a card.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, I was reading the Frog Horror.
Frog Horror, yes.
Because it's
important to note, does not get bounced by Thing in the Ice.
That is very true.
Tech!
Okay, let's read this out loud just for everyone, because this is a weird card. So 6/6 with Death Touch, which those two things are weird to put together. It's really big and it has Death Touch. What? At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice the Frog Horror, unless you sacrifice a land. Okay, so you're sacking a land every upkeep. Gotcha. You may play an additional land on each of your turns. That's good. Okay, thank you. And whenever one or more land cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, draw a card. So every turn you sack a land and you draw a card, and then you can play extra lands, and then anytime lands go to the graveyard from anywhere, you're drawing even more cards. This seems good.
It is an effective frog.
Did you, he asked knowingly, actually read the official Magic fiction with the Gitrog monster?
I did not, because I don't read any of those.
It was creepy as hell. You should read it.
I will probably not, but yeah, duly noted.
All right.
Ribbit.
Did you say Reddit or Ribbit?
Yes.
Definitely.
Excellent.
So, rewinding back, 16th place is Mono Red Eldrazi.
Yeah.
Which is, cool. It's there. We've seen a lot of this stuff before. But it's got four Gold Knight Castigators in the sideboard. And that's the new Red Angel.
Death Angel.
I'm curious as to how that works.
Matt Bimonti, Hangerback Walker, Reality Smasher, Hedron Crawler, Thopter Engineer, okay, Thought Not Seer, Vile Aggregate, Pia and Kira Nalar, and then Chandra Flamecaller.
Yeah, wow. Like the main board doesn't have new cards in it, but...
But, I mean, look at what's in it, though.
Yeah, no, it's great.
And then it's got Outnumber. Remember that card? No, nobody does.
I remember playing it in Limited and hoping.
Yeah. Spatial Contortion and... Okay, so it's that. Okay, that's good. I was getting a feel for the main deck before I flip over and look at the board with the Gold Knight Castigator.
I saw Gold Knight Castigator at the pre-release, get hit with things like Bound in Moonsilver and sleep paralysis more times than I saw it winning games.
That does not surprise me.
Attack you for 4, sure. Untap, pacify your God Knight Castigator, hit you for 28. Is this good?
That's why I'm curious seeing it here, because it's obviously in the board, but, like, does it work?
It's good against decks that don't put threats on the board. Something like Ramp.
You mean like creatures?
Yeah. Decks like Ramp and Esper Dragons, by the time they have a creature on the board, you're probably dead anyway. So putting a Golden Eye Castigator out there isn't going to hurt you.
So it's just a case of, and now you just start going all in on turn 4 before they can stabilize?
There's also the incredibly funny situation where you play an Assault Formation on turn 2, and then on turn 4 you play Golden Eye Castigator.
Remind us what that does.
It's the one that makes your creatures hit them with their butts instead.
Oh, okay.
Right. Badonkadonk attack. Check.
Butt fight!
Wow, this deck is playing weird cards. Like, it's playing Tears of Valakut. Anybody remember that card?
Yeah, if I'm limited, I do.
And it's running 2 copies of Ruins of Oren Reef.
I'm just... Like, not to say anything bad about the deck itself, it just feels like the early decks that I made where I took all of my favorite cards that were the same color and sort of adjusted for a curve and just went to town.
Did you have a top 16 in SCG Open with them?
No, I had sense to not join one because the prize payout's terrible.
I'm sorry, did I say that out loud?
Your mic is really good.
I mean, I wasn't saying that disparagingly. It's just odd. He's running Tears of Valakut and Ruins of Oren Reef, 2 cards that I had to read twice because I've never actually seen them before. Not that that's a bad thing, because
Nothing wrong with the deck. It has that feeling to me of, like, here's a lot of really awesome cards that are on color, and a lot of the cards in here are things I've only seen in the context of Limited, where they're great. So it just has that, like, almost that feeling of, here's a bunch of cards that I've got and let's do great things with them.
Ruins of Oren Reef is sick with Hangerback Walker.
Yes, it is. If you look at Olivia Voldaren, when she first started seeing standard play, that was said about her a lot. Oh yeah, she's just really good in Limited. She's not a standard player. Same was said of Packrat.
Packrat for like a full year before anyone noticed.
I called it as well on a podcast with
Alex. And Olivia Voldaren didn't matter for a long time. It wasn't until there was an Aristocrats deck that she saw any play, and she was like a one-of.
She didn't see play in Aristocrats. She saw play in Jund.
Right.
Falconrath Aristocrats saw play in Aristocrats.
They eventually put her into Aristocrats as well, because why not? But I don't remember her being quite as super all over the place, and even then it took a while.
It did take a while, but... The general rule that I've found is that if a card is that insane and limited, it's probably playable in standard. Except Bloodline Keeper for some reason.
And Drana?
Drana is still one of my pet cards that I will make work. Gosh darn it.
Wait, the new one or the old one?
The new one.
Okay. Bill, were you talking about the new or the old one?
It applies to both.
That's true, yeah.
The old one was really great and limited because nothing in that format could deal with it. But when you put it in a format that actually has removal, it doesn't work. Which is the story of most of the Eldrazi cards.
So 18th place is a green-white tokens deck.
Chris Anderson, was that him?
Chris Anderson, yeah, running Hangerback Walker, Scion Summoner, and Thraven Inspector, along with Gideon and Nissa, Voice of Zendikar, because she makes plant tokens. Hey, look at that.
And puts, more importantly, she puts counters on all of your other tokens.
Very true.
Hey, Surox in the board.
And Surox in the board, yeah, the hunt color version, which is nifty.
The one legal and standard.
This wasn't even the most fun green X tokens deck we saw all weekend. And I'm not seeing... Okay, there is a copy later on that we might not get to, but...
Yeah, this one doesn't look necessarily fun, but it is a different archetype in the... In the top, what is this, 32?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, then we go to 64. Red, White, Eldrazi, Jerry, yep, him.
Yeah, Jerry P.
Jerry, not Thompson. White Black Eldrazi by Brad Nelson, which is the same as the Michael Majors and Eric Himmel deck.
Yeah.
Jund Midrange, we already spoke about.
Green Red Eldrazi. Green Red Eldrazi deck survived. Hey, how about that? There's the ramp.
Wake me up when we get to 33rd place.
Is that what I think it is?
Yeah, it is.
Oh.
So the ramp deck is basically the same thing, except now it's got Traverse the Ulvenwald in it, which is pretty good. That's the I can't remember the card that searches for a basic land, puts it in your hand. What is that?
Lay of the Land.
Sure, that works. But yeah, it searches for a basic land, puts it in your hand for a single green. But if you have Delirium, then you search for a creature or land, put it in your hand.
Is
so,
it both?
No. Yeah, for a not single green, no, it's not both.
don't like it anymore.
It's not completely busted. This card sucks.
You mean Magic?
Yeah.
Welcome to r/spikes.
All right, let's see here. Moving on, blah, 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 more of the mid-range, whatever. Esper Demonic Pact. What in the...
There we go.
What Hello. In the actual hell?
That's what I'm talking about.
I'd like to subscribe to your newsletter.
Okay.
Esper Demonic Pact. Go ahead.
So Freedom. Charles League is running Esper Demonic Pact, which has three creatures that are all Wasteland Strangler. One Planeswalker that is Sorin, Anguished and Disappointed.
One Swedish maid.
And then removal, just all the removal. Okay, let's go through it. Deadweight, Silk Wrap, Sinister Concoction. You remember that card? Moving on. Stasis Snare, Anguished Unmaking, Disperse, just one Disperse, because why not? What? This one. Silumgar's Command, Angelic Purge, Languish. And there are varying numbers of those. And then there's Oath of Jace.
Oh my god. Which is weird.
Yeah, with only one Planeswalker. So I guess it's more of the draw three and discard two.
Yeah. That's the one.
There's, what did I miss? Starfield of Nyx.
Yeah.
Remember that card?
Yeah. It's a judge test given form.
And it is. And then Demonic Pact.
Oh!
That sound you're hearing is Chris Lansdale losing his whole stuff.
That makes me so happy in my adult parts. Like, as soon as I saw the cards in Shadows that said Sacrifice of Permanent, my mind went straight to Demonic Pact.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait, we couldn't bring it back with Starfield? And then my intelligible thought kind of got lost because...
And then you can beat people with it. And then sacrifice it.
So good. Some versions were running Bound in Moonsilver as well. Because you can sacrifice a permanent to move that around.
Yep.
So, speaking with at least two of you being judges, provided Chewie is still evading those tests. For now. What is the best way to signify which choices have been made on a demonic pact once people start doing this nonsense?
I put a die in each corner, starting top left as 1, 2, 3, 4, going clockwise around the card.
You have to make sure they understand what you're doing, but like this actually matters when people start doing stuff to it.
Yeah, I make sure they know that it's the order they're written on the card.
That's a good
way. Yeah, you could also, I recommend paper.
Yeah, I was gonna say you could write it down, and then every time you bounce it or sack it or whatever, you scribble that out and start a new list.
Well, you could also just write all four of them down on a piece of paper, tear it into four pieces, and just start making little stacks of them so people can tell what's happened. I mean, don't actually stack them, but make it clear.
It's kind of confusing when you have more than one, though.
I wonder if anyone's used dry erase marker on their sleeve.
I would not recommend it.
That is pretty funny, but I wouldn't recommend that either.
What's really making me happy right now is the card in the sideboard. The first card in the sideboard.
Yeah! Mike was actually playing this in a standard deck he built a while back. Blood Curse Knight is a 3-2 for 3 mana that doesn't matter, but as long as you control an enchantment, it gets +1/+1 in lifelink. And a 4/3 with lifelink for 3 mana is just sick.
This deck makes me so happy. I don't think the blue is necessary. It feels like, I mean, Selimgar's Command is nice and all, but I think you might be better with green for Herald of the Pantheon.
I think they're running it for the card draw on Jace. The Oath of Jace.
Sure. I guess.
But yeah, this is definitely...
This is sweet.
A cool deck, and I hope that it survives metagame shifts, just because I want to see what else you can do with this idea.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's got to be... Like, there's just so many good enchantments in Standard right now. Being able to bring them all back, it's got to be good, right?
Hopefully. I mean, I just want to kill someone with a dead weight. I've been trying so hard for years, but I want to actually kill the player with a dead weight.
<You're> disappointed.
Yeah, I can't wait until you get to the point where you can actually kill someone by dumping a sinister concoction on their head. Just turn this sideways, you're dead. Good times. Okay, let's move on. What was that? That was 33rd.
How deep do you want to go? Because there's a Sultai Delirium in 41st.
Sultai Delirium. What is that? I mean, obviously it's a Sultai self-mill deck. I'm just wondering. Mind Rack Demon. Gitrog Monster. Hey, buddy. To the slaughter? Okay.
Well, it is really
delirious. To the death? No. To the slaughter.
I'll have cake, please.
And traverse the Ulvenwald. Interesting.
Hey, I'm transgress the mind. Look at that art.
Oh, that art's sweet.
No, not looking at it. I can't see it. When I mouse over, I see nothing.
Oh, plus it is running 4 copies of the Footloose Raptor, which is always good.
So good. And Devastator, of course.
Whoa,
what?
Seasons Past in the sideboard.
I don't even remember what that does.
4 green, sorcery, return any number of cards with different converted mana cost from your graveyard to your hand,
and then
put it on the bottom of your library. This deck has enough variety that actually works.
See, now that's funny.
Get those hangerbacks back.
I was wondering why it was running Clash of Wills. I guess because it costs 1.
It does indeed.
Nice. And this deck can even get a 0 back with Hangerback Walker. Man. Yeah.
Well, the value is real. Also just land.
Well, yeah, but that's not nearly as much fun as a Hangerback Walker.
I don't know. You can cast 2 of them.
Whoa. So
also, you might want to leave the Hangerback in the graveyard because it counts for 2 types for Delirium.
That's very true.
Yeah, you just cast it. Oops, didn't pay any mana. Hey, I got Delirium. Sweet.
How did that happen?
And then my frog ate a land.
Then I found $5.
The people rejoiced.
My frog ate that too.
This is the deck. 44th place, Marquise Johnson.
I am looking at that right now, actually. Green black tokens.
This deck. Oh.
Yeah, so he's got Hangerback Walker, Blister Pod, Catacomb Sifter, Elvish Visionary, Loam Dryad, which I had to read twice because I didn't recognize it. Scion Summoner, okay. The Shaman of Forgotten Ways, remember that guy?
No, barely. I forgot.
The Ulvenwald Hydra, which, pretty funny. Sidisi Undead Vizier, the exploit Sidisi, because the other one's not legal anymore, and Ulamog. And then Nissa, Voice of Zendikar. And then it's running Evolutionary Leap, which makes sense in this particular deck, and Cryptolith Rite.
That card is effective.
Which for it's 1 and a green is an enchantment that says creatures you control have tap
Birds
and
of paradise.
1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So
you know what's good is when you can tap a catacomb, English is fun. An Eldrazi Scion for green mana and then sacrifice it for colorless mana.
Yeah, it actually makes Shaman of Forgotten Ways a thing.
Well, I mean, it already was.
I'm just glad it waited for Jeskai Ascendancy to go away.
Oh! Oh!
Yep.
Meanwhile, in modern.
Just one moment, please. I need to make an order.
So what do you do with all of that mana other than the Shaman of Forgotten Ways? Because
Ulamog?
Hi, Ulamog!
Oh, I guess you cast Ulamog. Yeah, I forgot about him already.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. How about them apples?
Good.
I think Ulamog ate the apples before the frog got a chance.
Well, his hunger does not cease.
It's true, yeah.
It is, in fact, ceaseless.
And then, in 43rd, Jund Company by Nathan Doherty. This deck what?
This deck looks cool. I really like this.
Yeah, it's, it looks like the next step in, like the less combo rally version of, what was the deck that just, the rally. There we go. Cause it's running a bunch of the same cards.
Ha! It has Sin Prodder.
And it's got Sin Prodder.
Pokey, 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 pokey.
I hope pokey, pokey, pokey.
Anyway.
It's basically rally without rally, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So it's got Catacomb Shifter, Catacomb Sifter, Footloose Raptor, Den Protector, Elvish Visionary, Fleshbag Marauder, Nantuko Husk, Sin Prodder, which is the, what did we call him? The Browbeat Devil?
Yeah.
Smothering Abomination, which I had to read twice because I didn't remember him. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice a creature. Whenever you sacrifice a creature, draw a card, and he's a 4/3 flyer.
Is that good with Nantuko Husk? It's unclear.
It seems all right.
I'm going to throw in a Cutthroat just to make sure.
Yeah, Zulaport Cutthroat, Liliana Heretical Healer, you know, Flippy Lily, and Nissa Vestwood Seer, the Flippy Nissa. And then the spells consist of 4 Collected Company, and that is all, because what else do you need? Is there anything Coco doesn't get? Yep, the Smothering Abomination.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine.
It's not very good, that one.
Sometimes put Den Protector on the bottom of your library rather than put it into play with company because value is better.
Excuse me.
No.
Nah.
So there's no Tireless Tracker in this deck, which surprises me.
Huh. Maybe they just couldn't find a hole for it, or maybe they didn't think about it. I don't know. Maybe if you are or you know Nathan Doherty, ask. Or let us know.
Should be reading my articles every Monday on StarCityGames.com.
I'm amazed we got that far without a plug.
It is impressive.
Yeah. So, is there anything else?
We're done with Standard for now.
Yeah, it looks like Standard is pretty much all of those things and more, but we don't really have the and more here.
You have a time.
But Martin.
Oh, man, it's such a wonderful world. I'm stretching and stretching, and I've yet to bump into a Seed Rhino.
So, Modern, there were 172 people playing, and Daryl Ayers won with Scapeshift, because this is the first week of New Modern, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because what happened in Modern last week?
Total banination of one card.
Yes, they ate the Eldrazi deck with, or by banning the, what's it called?
Eye of Eugene.
Yeah, that's the one. Look, they banned it. I already forgot what it's called. But yeah, they banned the Eye of Eugene, and as we discussed last week, it ate, or the week, whenever it was, it took away the explosive start and complete brutality of the Eldrazi deck, which means that the Eldrazi deck is nowhere to be seen at the moment, although it's possible someone will bring it back. I mean, it happens.
What if I want to draw 3 cards?
Then, what?
But chew it.
Then I guess I'll suspend and wait 4 turns and draw 3 cards.
There is that.
Brian Perlman was suspended. What if they all cost 2 less?
Well, we'll never know because it's never happened now.
But anyway, so yeah, Scapeshift won. And I'm sitting here looking at the deck like I don't know what Scapeshift is. I'm like, wow, look at this deck. Wait, this is Scapeshift. Yeah.
I mean, it's got an Ancestral Vision. That's something.
It does?
And the board.
Oh, and the board. Okay. Yeah, look at that. 3 copies. Yay.
Modern is different now.
Second place, Adonis Medrano playing Jund. And this is pretty much classic Jund. Yeah.
Yeah, I looked over these lists before. The new cards are not here unless I missed them. The new lands are not competitive with Modern's lands, and I did not see our wake up and smash you in the face land, so.
Yeah. So let's see. Infect in third, so an Incluse is happy.
Oh, yeah. I'm just so ecstatic I don't know what to say out loud. That I isn't mean, a swear word.
Yes.
It has infect
because
and blue.
There's no swearing on Monday Night Magic. Now, on the odds and ends, that's a whole other story.
That's the first thing you heard from Clues. By the way, for those of you who care, I'm very sorry I haven't gotten last week's odds and ends up so you can hear Clues swear. I've been busy.
I just call him when I want to hear him swear.
That is true.
The trick is to call him while he's actually teaching. Those kids don't know what hit him.
Fourth place is, look at this, two-color zoo.
Yep.
It's just straight up.
Gruul.
Yeah, Gruul aggro.
Just smash your face.
Yeah, like, so is this a thing in Modern, or is this just a symptom of the metagame has shifted severely, let's just play aggro and hope for the best?
It has been a thing.
Okay, I just don't remember this. I haven't seen this particular list in a while, but then I haven't seen much in Modern other than Eldrazi in a while, so I guess that's a good point.
Yeah. Fishies!
Are there fishies?
Joshua Everly is in fifth place with fishies.
Oh yeah, Modern Merfolk. How about that? It's so weird to say that out loud and it not be a weird.
We're still at approximately zero Shadows Over Innistrad cards.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a trend.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. There's more Infect in sixth, another Scapeshift in seventh. Oh, wait. Nope. I was going to say Abzan Company, are we looking at? Nope, no Siege Runners. I saw Abzan and just assumed.
The Scapeshift list in seventh has Hunting Wilds in it.
Really? Wow, remember that card?
Nope.
That's the one that turns forests into dudes, right? Yeah, with Kicker. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nifty.
That's a card. The thing that exists. Grixis Control. Anything in here that's interesting? Grixis Control. Ooh, Thing in the Ice.
Really?
Matthew Nestor, whose name apparently does not have capital letters in it.
Nope, not at all.
In 10th place, has two Thing in the Ice in his Grixis Control deck.
That
we found it.
That actually makes sense in this deck.
It does.
We had to wander out of the top eight, but there it is.
Yeah, and the Grixis Control in next place is actually a pretty different deck. It's running Dark Dwellers and Young Peasy and Kalitas, whereas this one is running Snapcaster. Well, I guess they're both running Snap. This one's running Thing in the Ice and Pia and Karen Nalar and Tassiger, although the spells are similar enough.
Yeah.
Huh, cool.
Dreskai Flash, Brad Bonin.
Dreskai Flash. Oh, yeah, this card. Okay. Hey, look, Kiki-Jiki. Yeah.
Kiki-Jiki.
In the case it wasn't implied, all these Grixis Control decks are running their full assortment of Ancestral Vision because it's blue and draws them cards. And it is recently unbanned. So, good
time. Yeah. We did forget to mention that, but he's right. Ancestral Vision is a thing in Modern yet again. Let's see. Decepticons. Hey, look, a blue-white Tron deck. Yep, that's Tron deck. Oh, it's also running Thopter Foundry and Sword of the Meek as one of, because why not?
Yeah. Sometimes you want more ways to kill.
Because Sword of the Meek was recently unbanned as well. For those that are not following along at home. What else? Kiki Cord. Yep. Blue-White Foundry. What is that? Oh, it's the actual Foundry deck. Hey, look at that!
Yep, it's back.
Clan Ironworks. Yep, a whole lot of one-drop... one and two drop artifacts that do things. Garipur Aether Grid, Open the Vaults, and Imrakul.
That's what you find.
Yep.
Why we don't open the vaults.
Huh. And of course, four Sword of the Meek and four Thopter Foundry because, you know.
That's what the deck does.
That's the deck. Good lord.
Oh my goodness. I'm still flabbergasted at this 30th place list. I'll just wait for you to catch up.
What is Thopter Gifts? Another exactly. Sword of the Meek. Thopter Foundry deck with Gifts Ungiven. So lots of one of Silver Bullet type things.
Yeah.
It's also running Iona and Elesh Norn instead of Emrakul.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. These are things that we will see in the... Jerry Thompson is running Blue White Thopter Foundry as well. Hey, look, Burn in 27th. Yay, fire.
Fuego.
And then, okay, yep, just to make Chris happy, 30th place, White Red Angels. You fuzzed out. So, say that again.
This is a shout out to Heather. So, well, Kyriakos Mavroulis is the guy who has the deck here. And I'm sure Heather, Revised Angel on Twitter, is loving this. Can we read the deck list, Joey?
Yeah, this is a blast from not only from the past, but from the never was. It's like
also from the sun.
From the sun. There are four copies of the baddest Sarah Angel ever, Baneslayer Angel.
She has protection from demons.
Yes, she does. Four copies of Guardian Seraph, which I don't remember ever being a thing.
Nope.
But makes sense. If a source an opponent controls would deal damage to you, prevent one of that damage. Seems good.
Hey, isn't that force field? Oh no, that was all but one of that damage.
Okay. Sunblast Angel, who blows up tapped things. Gisela, Blade of Gold Knight. Damage. And Linvala, Keeper of Silence, because fun is not allowed.
Gisela essentially says 7 mana, you win the game.
Let's hope so. And then also, look at these cards. So there's Blood Moons because modern. Leyline of Sanctity. I 4 of those in the main. That's interesting. Why are there 4 Leyline of Sanctity in the main?
I guess because Bud is a deck he can never beat without it.
That's true. This deck does start its curve at 4.
2 Dawn Charm.
Wow.
3 Faith Shield, 1 Riot Control, 3 Sunshine. Why is this deck not running a Chalice of the Void? Like, there's no one drops in this deck except for, like,
Faith Shield and no great loss there.
I mean, this deck seems tailor made for Chalice.
This deck is weird. It is
weird, but somehow it got 30th place. And it has 12 angels in it.
Well, it got 30th place at a 92-person event.
172.
This is still the modern one. Sorry, my brain already wandered to Legacy.
Oh, God.
Like, why isn't Clues talking?
Sorry.
So this is a very strange deck. Also, I have to look at the 31st place deck because it's called Taking Turns. Oh, it's this deck. Oh, my God, I think I've only ever seen this once. It's a deck that runs Walk the Eons, Time Warp, Temporal Mastery, Part the Water Veil. Is that all? That's it for extra turns. But let's see. So that's 3, that's 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Take an extra turn after this one. Spells. And Elixir of Immortality and Thassa, Jace Belair, and Dictative Crucifix. It's a very strange deck. Giga Drowse, tap all your stuff, start taking extra turns. How does it win?
Thassa.
Are there enough enchantments to wake Thassa up?
Well, yeah, Dictate of Crucifix. Eventually you'll get a Jace, a Dictate, and a Thassa out, and you just hit them.
Yeah, we ran into this a few months ago.
Yeah, just once, though.
There's a guy locally who plays this, but he has a Panoptic Mirror.
Because we were like, you can't even turn on Thassa, but we sort of forgot that Thassa counts herself as an enchantment. People called us out on that on Twitter.
I think my confusion was just in my brain for some way back then in my brain, it was just a case of Dictate for whatever reason. You wouldn't have more than one out. Like, I thought it was Legendary or something equally dumb. And yeah. So I'm like, well, I guess if you get exactly all of your permanents out, you're fine. It didn't occur to me. You just need 2 of them in Thassa.
Yeah.
Yeah, the deck's stupid.
Excuse me. I was thinking of I was thinking of Starfield of Nyx for some reason. Thassa's Devotion to Blue. Right. My bad. So yeah, this deck. Let's just close that. It's one of those that looks like it'd be really cool to watch someone play once.
Yeah.
Unless you were sitting across the table.
That's why I said
watch. You're still watching them play it. I mean, you don't really have a choice.
That is a good point.
I guess you get up and leave, but...
That's frowned upon.
Yeah, you can do a Kibler. While he's killing me, can I go to the bathroom?
Just write F6 on a piece of paper and leave. They love that.
So that was Modern. There, of course, in the first week, there are some Thopter Foundry decks, of course. And there's plenty of blue card draw and other things filling in the giant gaping hole left by the Eldrazi's departure. So that will shake itself out over the next few weeks, and we'll get to actually see what it looks like now. So how about Legacy, where nothing changed?
How about Legacy, where 91 people showed up to play the King of All Formats? 91, that's
pitiful.
Not great, actually.
Yeah.
But there it is. In first place, we had Tyler Bailey playing Shardless Bug, and there are no new cards.
Yeah.
Unless I missed something completely.
I severely doubt it.
In second place, Brad Gutkin sadly played Miracles.
Stop.
But at least it didn't win first place. So yay for small Miracles. Oh.
Freaking magnets. How do they work?
Yeah.
Charge counters.
They...
Yep.
Kind of. In third place, Nick DiTizio. DiTizio?
Sounds good.
Sure.
Yeah, had Punishing. Is that Junk? Yeah, that's Punishing Junk, right?
No.
I don't remember it ever called that.
I mean... For
you know what, Ozon, because I don't like that phrase.
Yeah, that's phrasing, man.
Yep, I'm going with Punishing Junk. In fourth place. And it
man,
also...
My clues, the ringtones are getting better and better.
It also had no new cards. Sorry. It's just the way it is. I know you're all terribly, terribly shocked. Fourth place, Travis Crowley was rocking the Death and Taxes with, let me just check here, no new cards.
It's actually Travis Cowley.
Is it Cowley? I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is not Mr. Crowley.
I'm sorry, I know too many Crowleys in my life. It's...
Oh yeah, you do, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I actually know several Crowleys. But it was none of those. In fifth place, we have what Star City calls Storm and I call Ant.
Call it Ant because it's actually Ant?
Yes, that's right.
Sounds like a good reason.
That's weird.
Actually, strangely enough, I often call Storm decks Ant even if they're not. But in this case, I'm pretty sure this one's Ant.
It is, yeah.
We'll go with that. Sixth place, Sean Griffin had Nykvit.
I love this deck.
Yeah, well, looks like, let me just check, no new cards.
What the hell is Nykvit?
Nykvit, it's kind of a control-y ramp deck that, you know, Veteran Explorer?
Yep.
Okay, you know how none of your opponents are running basic lands?
Yep.
Yeah, that's the deal.
Oh, hey, look! Siege Rhino!
There he is! He's not dead.
He's resting.
Not dead yet.
I'm more entertained by seeing all of these cards that were never actually in standard in this deck.
Yeah, like,
what the heck?
There's a Glissa the Traitor, a Marin of Clan Nel Toth, and a Sigarda Host of Herons.
Well, I just meant the Marin of Clan Nel Toth and the Pernicious Deed and all of these other examples of cards that are printed in a manner that they can just jump right into Legacy.
Pernicious Deed was in standard, so it was in Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
That was a long time.
Well, there's a good thing I don't remember that.
I love how this deck is playing Path to Exile and not Swords to Plowshares.
I hate how this deck is running two Sensei's Divining Top, so Sean Griffith is dead to me.
But it has Glissa the Traitor, so I forgive him for some of it.
I went on the Mirren side and did not get that promo.
Oh, seventh place. Kerry Ponting is playing Punishing Junk. And what's this? Look at that sideboard. One copy of Arlen Cord.
What?
Look at that. New card. Singular.
Wolfwalker.
Also, it's Corey Ponting.
Is it Corey? I'm sorry. What did I say?
Doesn't matter. Keep going.
Great. Awesome. That was seventh place. Eighth place, we have Joseph Milia? Milal?
He might Milia, I guess, because he has Ulamog in his deck.
And he's playing Cloud Post.
Is this a deck?
Cloud Post? Yeah.
Cloud Post, absolutely.
Huh.
You have any idea how much mana you can make?
I mean,
I'd wager between 16 and 32.
Yeah, like all of it, I'm guessing, but...
This deck is not 12 post, it's 11 post. There's only 3 Vesuva.
Aha.
Oops. Weak.
Busted.
Womp womp.
Not even trying.
However, he's running 4 copies of Sensei's Divining Top and is therefore dead to me.
Disqualified.
No.
I can't see a Thespian stage. There's so many missed post opportunities.
I can't disqualify.
Yeah, right? This could be 16 post, man.
Oh, man. Oh, 9th place. It's a real magic deck.
I don't know. You said it was Legacy.
Well, actually, I did want to go back for a minute to the Nykfit deck, and I wanted to note that there's a Tsunami in the sideboard, and that's awesome.
Oh my god, Tsunami.
Oh wow, I'd forgotten all about the green Boil.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need Tsunami and Boil in a deck.
Wait, no, not Boil, because it's a sorcery. Green Boiling Seas?
Boil is an instant.
Yeah, so it's a Green Boiling Seas.
Oh, okay, right. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, if you could just cram all the cards that say destroy all islands into a sideboard of a deck, I would love you forever. Just make that happen.
Although we won't end up talking about it because you won't finish high enough.
You certainly will not, but I will love you forever.
You might like the deck I was trying to build in Modern with Painter's Servant naming red and Celestial Purge to exile their islands, which are now red.
Huh. I approve.
It also played blue cards for Sphinxes too.
Whoa. What?
Oh yeah.
No.
Maybe?
No.
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 Now applying Spanish translation. No.
Just no.
Solamente no.
So are we out of Legacy?
Yeah, I mean, there are more Legacy decks, but I mean, 19th place is Belcher. Eh? Eh?
Yeah.
I like Belcher.
I want Belcher to run the frog for reasons.
Ribbit.
And those reasons are...
Because frog?
Yeah,
because frog horror. Yeah.
Because it's called Belcher, and I wanted to have a giant frog in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Give you the flavor, I guess?
So that was the Star City Open weekend in Baltimore.
Hooray!
Let us move on. So we have 2 judges with us. So how about... There was a massive upheaval.
Well, look, upheaval might be a strong word.
Not all permanents were returned. Maybe it was an evacuation.
Okay, there was a massive, on paper, giant change on paper that in reality won't actually change much in the judge
program. I was going to say, okay, let's be clear about something, first of all. For most of the listeners out there, what we're about to talk about will change nothing for you.
There's a couple of things that may help you that we'll get to in a second, but the majority of the changes are minor.
Magic cards are now made of wood.
Yeah. So I don't know how many of our listeners have been to Grands Prix where
a few.
Promoted to level 3. Very often, one of the senior judges will get on the microphone and say, please join me in welcoming the judge program's newest L3, Chris Lansdell, only in my dreams. And then everybody stands up and claps, because it's a big deal when somebody makes it to L3. Well, today, we kind of got 15 new L3s.
Yep.
Sort of.
Yeah, kind of.
Ish. Except that they used to be 5s and 4s.
They did, yes.
So they basically redesigned the entire level system in the judge program. For those of you, in lay terms, level 4s head judge Grand Prix. Level 5s can do that. They also head judge Pro Tours and the World Magic Cup. And now that job will be shared among a bigger potential pool of people.
Yeah, and to be clear, the primary difference as to what a 4 and a 5 did as opposed to a 3 is that the 4 and the 5s helped to shape the program, the judge program behind the scenes.
For example, people who, like Toby Elliott is a level 5, was a level 5.
Was
in charge of policy, writing tournament policy.
Right.
trying to think what the others did. But that's as an example. So that's all changed. Now everybody is either a 1, 2, or a 3.
Yeah, that's right. There are only 3 levels plus.
There's also no more rules advisor.
Did they actually say that straight up?
Yes. Rules advisor gone. Dead. No more. Run down the curtain and gone to join the choir invisible. It is an X status.
But...
Huh. I missed that part. Okay, all right.
So, how does this affect Joe Magic Player at a store like, oh, I don't know. Name a magic store that might be somewhere in Raleigh, North Carolina.
I'm going to say Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina. It's a great shop. You should check it out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've never heard of that one before.
That's a completely new one on me.
So, for those of us who are level 2, burnout from head judging PPTQs is a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in areas where it's hard to get a level 3 to make new level 2s. What this will do now is it is possible for senior level 2s, we assume, we don't know how it's going to work yet, but it is possible for some level 2s to obtain the level 2 tester badge, for want of a better word, which will allow them to make more level 2s. Why do you care, you might be asking? Clues, why do they care? I'm so glad Truncate Silence.
I was going to say, Clues, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I thought that was rhetorical. I'm sorry.
Well, they care because this will mean that there are more judges to head judge pre-TQs, so more stores can run them, because right now there are stores who simply cannot get a head judge because there isn't one available.
Yeah.
So more level 2s means more pre-TQs, means more opportunities for you to play on the Pro Tour.
Who, me?
Sure, if you want to. You've top-8ed a PTQ before.
True doesn't play Magic.
That's also true.
He just plays Hearthstone.
Oh, no, no. I actually have a Magic Duels video that has been recorded and is waiting for editing.
Do you play Force of Will, Chewie?
No, I don't have any. They're expensive.
No, the card game. It's actually really cheap. So, yeah, that's one way this will affect local players, is that there will probably be now more pre-TQs because the ability to make more level 2 judges is a thing that has been – that will be shared out among more people – making it easier. The other thing is, level 1s are going to be even more focused than normal on store-level events. So they will be able to spend the majority of their time making your F&Ms, your regular weekly drafts or whatever, a more fun and welcoming experience without having to worry about knowing things like policy in the IPG, which they never had to before, but that kind of wasn't really defined because there was a huge gap in what a level 1 had to do.
I see.
No, you don't.
I don't. I was just, there was silence, so I was trying to fill it.
Yeah, but we can truncate silence. It's all good.
If he remembers.
Shut up.
Yeah, he usually does.
I forgot. Sometimes. Once in however many years of podcasting since I discovered it.
And you're going to listen to it later, Clues, so it would never actually occur to you. If he's lying.
But you know, silence is an instant. And silence can never enter the battlefield. However.
What if we manifest it?
Then it's not silence. It's a face down permanent with no name, no color, no abilities.
That's right. Give that man a judge test.
I've already taken it multiple
times. Ta-da! Look at that. Back in
just time. Just add water.
Give him a judge.
Thanks, Chris. Now maybe he'll get off my case for a short period of time.
Nope. Nice try.
Hey, Chewie, you want to be a judge?
Damn it. So
that wasn't a no.
I have to ask.
Yes, sir.
What do we think of this new judge hierarchy infrastructure, whatever you want to call it?
We in general or Chris and I specifically?
Let's start with you two specifically.
Okay, Chris, go right ahead, buddy.
Largely positive. There is some stuff largely around the lower levels and what level 1 means and how it works that needs to be clarified. But the majority of the changes I like, and I think it's going to be a great thing moving forward.
How about you, Clues?
I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud. I agree with Chris.
There's another one for your Clues ringtones, Bill.
Yeah, there you go, Bill. That one's for you, buddy.
That condition's never going to be satisfied again. I'm not going to go through the trouble.
Overall, yeah, I think it's a really nice change. You know, for a long time, I felt that there was this kind of weird gulf between L1 and L2 that, you know, you had this kind of – L2 was this huge level where you could have this – and L1 to a certain extent as well, where you could have this kind of huge breadth of experience of people who are labeled with the same number. And it didn't really make a whole lot of sense overall. And now it's, you know, L2s fill that kind of, it's really hard for me to put all of this into words, cause it's, you know, it's a new policy. I'm still digesting it, still getting a handle on what it all means. But functionally, okay, let's start at the top. Functionally, there was virtually no difference between an L5, an L4, and an L3 actually at a tournament. It was just who was wearing the shirt. Who's actually the one in charge? It's that guy over there. Just point at that guy. But as far as rules knowledge goes, if you talk to high-level judges, if you ask them, hey, how do things change? Because, you know, there's this weird perception from players that your level really dictates how well you know the rules, which is not actually necessarily true. I mean, don't get me wrong. Your average L4 does have a better grasp of the rules than an L1. Absolutely true. But at the same time, is an L4 actually better at rules knowledge and policy knowledge necessarily than an L3? No, not necessarily.
In fact, two of the best rules people in the program are level 2s. In Carsten Hazer and Callum Milne.
Yeah, absolutely true. And if you talk to the high-level judges prior to now, the level redefinition, they would tell you that rules knowledge pretty much peaks at L3 because the L3s were the ones who were doing the vast majority of the judging, had the most recent experience kind of in the trenches, as it were. And so this is a perfectly reasonable redefinition, honestly. Now, added on top of this, stapled to the top of it for if you're actually a judge, there are these additional, I believe they're calling them advanced roles.
Yes.
You can think of them as badges. Okay. There are certifications that you can have.
Do we need any stinking badges, Cliff?
We did, in fact, need stinking badges, believe it or not.
Are they like merit badges?
Kind of.
Yeah,
they're
sure.
Like
let's
Pokemon
go with
gen
that.
Badges.
Oh.
You need them to control higher level Pokemon.
They're more like scout badges.
I mean, that would be merit badges, yeah.
You could be an L3 with an additional certification, for instance. And those additional certifications indicate other roles that you might take on. For instance, Grand Prix head judge is one of those roles. So it's someone who has gone through some additional, let's call it additional screening. Why not? I don't know why that phrase came to mind. That indicates that the program feels that they are well suited to be not just an L3, but a head judge at a Grand Prix event, something large where they're managing a very large staff, keeping many pieces moving, et cetera, et cetera. Not all L3s are well suited to such a task. But, you know, it's something that some finite number of L3s would do. And so they can get their badge to do so. For instance, regional coordinators, there's a thing that some people may be familiar with. Your RC, is essentially an additional certification for an L3. So, it's kind of, I don't really want to call them levels because they're not really anymore. They're just, this is an additional role that this person is taking on, if that makes sense. So there you go. Again, from your day-to-day standpoint, particularly at large events, it's not really going to change much. There's from a large event standpoint, what a player really cares about is there's a floor judge and there's either the head judge or the person that you've appealed to who's standing in for the head judge because the event is just too big for the head judge to be everywhere. That's still true. But that's it. You don't really care that person is an L4 versus an L5. It doesn't matter. It didn't matter before. It still doesn't matter.
Yeah, the only thing that really matters to me is now I don't know what to say instead of high-level judges. Should I say, like, highly certified judges? Because that could have different meanings.
Very.
You could call them judges.
Yeah, you could just call them judges.
But how am I going to narrow down, like, the high-level judges? See? I can't.
Premier judges?
Now, A question that my lovely wife raised is, what does this do to Judge Emeritus? Because that's no longer listed in these levels. Is that an additional certification?
Well, that was removed when the Hall of Fame started, right?
Because I still think that it should just be a badge. I think that'd be great.
Sure, but the Hall of Fame is also going away, apparently, so...
You have the Emeritus badge.
Also, there's nothing in this blog post about the Rules Advisor post. The word advisor does not appear. I control F2.
No, it wasn't officially part of that post, but there is another post which I can't find anymore. There was a link that someone else posted, and I can't find it, which has a full listing of all of the levels in the process, and Rules Advisor is level no longer appearing in this film.
Gotcha.
Those responsible have been sacked.
The Tom Bombadil of judges.
Oh, now I'm sad.
You know what else is a silly place? Wizards of the Coast. Apparently.
I've never been there.
They have a new CEO now.
They do.
Look at you just bouncing all over the show notes. Let's not go in order. No.
Yeah, but it was a nice segue.
He's so eager to jump to the next topic.
I'm just trying to keep things flowing. Like the Orinoco.
Sail away.
I'm glad someone listens to
Sail away. Sail away. Yes. A person whose name I had never read, Greg Leeds, has resigned as president of Wizards of the Coast. So the new president is a man named Chris Cox, who apparently plays Magic.
So are you saying that Greg Leeds chickened out?
I think if he was going to chicken out, he probably would have done it a long time ago.
Yeah, that's true.
He was there for a while. It's actually not that uncommon to swap your CEOs on a fairly regular basis in large companies anyway.
So is a CEO the same as a president? Because it clearly says president. I don't know corporate structure well enough to know if that's the same thing.
CEO is different from president, but the roles often overlap, just like how there's CFOs and COOs and all these other C-level titles. But I was just more using it as an example of people at the top of these things do step down. They don't just do it for life.
Yeah. And he's been there for 8 years. 8 years?
It's been a while.
He started at Hasbro in 2001, and he became president in 2008.
There it is, 2008. So yeah, 8 years. Okay.
So 15 years, yeah, you're good.
Now, I've seen a lot of people talking about this on social media, talking about how great it is that the guy taking over not only plays Magic, but at Microsoft he had a lot to do with digital products, was involved in a couple of high-profile games. And I'm just thinking, he's the CEO. He's not going to care. He's not hands-on. He's not going to be in there doing dev work on MTGO.
Well, the stuff that he did at Microsoft was a general manager position, which does matter.
Yes, but that's not the position he's going into now.
I think it's one of those things to keep in mind that he's done a number of things. Like, I'm literally looking at his resume right now, and he's got a varied skill set ranging from the marketing level positions to the project development to ultimately, yeah, he was a VP of OEM technical sales, which actually is a big deal from the top level of a company when you're making strategic decisions on a budget.
Absolutely. Yes, and I'm not debating any of that. What I'm saying is that his technical knowledge working hands-on in development of software isn't going to be of much use in this job because he's not going to be working on Modo like the people are saying, oh my God, this is great, he's going to fix Modo.
I don't think that he was hands-on writing code. I don't know where anyone's getting that from, press release anyway.
There's also people who were tweeting the announcement tweet, people replying to things like, great, unbanned Deathrite Shaman in Modern.
Well, that's the
internet. You ignore those people.
Yeah. He's just...
Welcome to the internet, where the people are made up and the idiots are real.
That's pretty good.
Anyway.
But yes, as someone who has led engineering teams, I think the assumption is that even if he's not hands-on directly about it, the people that do work on this stuff now have to report to him, and he will be able to actually set expectations for them that are both reasonable and probably stern and forward-thinking.
And he won't need to have stuff explained to him in layman's terms.
Right. Yeah, it's not like he's Greg Leeds' nephew who's getting the job because he's Greg Leeds' nephew.
Are we sure?
This is a guy who... Well, that's not why he's getting the job. This is a guy who knows his stuff, and that's what's important.
Besides, if you want...
How many times have we ever mentioned Greg Leeds as president of Wizards of the Coast? I, to my knowledge, have never seen his name before, so chances are this won't matter to us directly.
Yeah.
Yep, you're right.
One fun side fact that I did not see mentioned in the press release is the fact that he also has another name, which is Christian Page, which is the name that he wrote fantasy novels under for, like, you know, young teens and preteens. He actually has a page on Amazon for one of the things that he sold, and it's kind of neat because it's one of those things where it's not like he was a CEO first and or whatever. You know, he wasn't just like a business guy first who happens to take on this job. He's kind of been living this thing for a while, and now he gets to step into it, which honestly bodes better for the company if he's interested in playing the game and is also just interested in this topic in general.
So you're saying he's a huge nerd?
Yes.
Excellent.
That is a plus. All right, then. So, yeah, that's Watsy news, whatever. So while we're on news things involving Watsy, something that you may have seen today, which was all over the internet, is a documentary called Enter the Battlefield, Life on the Magic the Gathering Pro Tour. This is a feature-length documentary by Nathan Holt and Sean Kornhauser, and if those names sound familiar, they're the guys behind Walking the Plains. Walk the Plains?
Walking the Plains.
Okay, I was right the first time. So, yeah, they've been working on this for 2.5 years, thereabouts. And it's a very personal look at, let's see here, 7 figures from the Pro Tour's past and present, blah, 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 Owen Turtenwald, Reed Duke, William Jensen, Chris Pecula, Patrick Chapin, Shahar Shenhar, and Melissa DeTora. And it's...
I think...
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was done.
The biggest part of this is that it's going to be on Netflix.
Yes. It
Wait,
premieres...
What?
Let's see here. It hits Netflix and YouTube April 26th. So, and April 25th, twitch.tv/magic is running a 12-hour marathon starting at April 25th, 12 p.m. Pacific time. So that's 12 noon Pacific time, April 25th. So if you want to catch it a day before it hits Netflix and YouTube, then there you go.
Which, by the way, is the week... is right after the Pro Tour.
Yes. Which makes perfect sense.
It does, because everybody's on a high after watching Insert Winner's Name Here win the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, the Pro Tour ends... Wait, is it the 24th, or is that or is it the previous? Yeah, it's the 24th. So we'll get to see the top 8 the 24th. And then on the 25th, they're going to be running this for 12 hours. And then on the 26th, which is Tuesday, it'll be all over everything.
So should we talk about the names that they chose for this?
I just rattled those off.
You did, but should we talk about the merits of the various choices, or do you not want to do that?
Not especially, no.
Tune in.
Yeah, watch.
If you would like to know about these people, as it turns out, we've just told you where you can find out.
Yeah, and
I
it's...
just hope Owen, they hope, English, I hope they make Owen out as a heel.
Somehow I doubt it. Which
they're gonna have a hard job not.
Which zing. That guy sucks. So yeah, I mean there's not really much else to say. It's much more about each of these 7 players, like personal stories, personal journey, what they're playing for, et cetera, et cetera. It's not, you know, stats and magic and all that. So it's more for it's sort of like a way to try to make magic a little more appealing to the mainstream, because I, for instance, know nothing about the world of cycling, and yet I watched a documentary on Lance Armstrong's rise and fall just a couple weeks ago because it was fascinating.
So one of the things that I and many others, but I can only speak from my own personal experience, I've been calling for ages, is a way for people to get more involved with the players. Because if you look at single player sports, they are sold largely on the characters playing them more than they are on the sport itself. So if you want your casual Magic player to tune into the Pro Tour stream, they need to know why they care that Reed Duke is doing well. They need to know that if Reed is playing Owen, who do they cheer for? Whose personal story do they like better? So not only does this give us a way to see that, but I saw a lot of pros today saying on Facebook, posting this link saying, if you've ever been really curious about what I do, watch this when it comes out. So it gives a way for people like Sam Black to say to their muggle friends, watch this to learn all there is to know about my job, basically. Which I think is great. It's going to bring in like a whole new audience to Magic who are watching more for the people than for the game. And who knows, they might get hooked on the game too.
That's true. When I lived with my parents years and years ago, the old man and I would watch poker tournaments. And of course, you know, poker's easy enough to learn, but I didn't really care. I was there because, actually, David Williams was, before I knew he was a Magic player, he was a poker player that I watched and was rooting for in the World Series of Poker. So.
Also, your mom is adorable.
Yes, yes, she is. That had nothing to do with watching poker with the old man, though, but. I can't think of single player sports. Like, there's tennis, I guess.
Golf.
I used to pull for Andre Agassi, you know, back in the day. Because he was a character.
Way more people know who Tiger Woods is than ever cared about golf.
That is also true, yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, tennis and golf, I guess, are bowling is one, but...
Technically, racing is a team sport, if you're going to be, you know, generous and call motorsports a sport. But people know the names more so than they know the teams.
Yeah, 300 laps with your right turn blinker on.
And then they never do it.
Anyway, it's actually your, isn't it your left turn blinker? Yeah, isn't it drive fast turn left? Yeah.
Maybe for you.
That's why I say they never do it.
Anyway, so feel free to check that out. The link to this post is in the show notes for all the information that you could want. And that's pretty cool. I will be watching that sometime after it hits the internet. I don't know when because... time. And, okay, so we've mentioned over the last 2 years the... Hang on, let me not screw this up. Scroll. The Hunter Burton Memorial Open, which is just what it says. It's a Magic tournament with cash prizes in Texas in honor of Hunter Burton. And there is a nice write-up. Now, this happened... When did this happen? Within the last few weeks. I'm terrible at dates. Do what?
It was a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So this piece here is it's a little late, but you know, whatever. But it's all about the story of Hunter Burton, who took his own life. And that's a big part of why we wanted to talk about this. Because, it's a very serious thing, and by all means, talk to someone, reach out for help. It's the best possible thing you can do, if that is a problem. But it's the story of Hunter and his family who is, doing this tournament every year, for him, and it's just a good story. So, and from all accounts, and I've heard these accounts from a crap load of people, then you should totally, if you're anywhere nearby, you should totally check this tournament out because it's getting bigger every year. This is what, the third year? The fourth year?
I believe it's the third.
Believe it's the what? You blinked out.
The third.
Okay.
I know a couple of judge friends of mine flew down from Seattle to help run this. So it does pull in people from far and wide.
Yeah, and it's only in its third year and it's just stupidly big already.
And the funds go to a great cause. So it's good to see. About 10 months ago, the judge community lost one of our own to suicide. And this tournament really hits home personally for me. It was a very close friend of mine who we lost. And knowing that the support for stuff like this, where people are encouraging their friends and people that they care about to reach out to somebody anytime they are feeling down, it doesn't matter how many times and how many people say it, it can't be said enough. You have people who care about you. Reach out, talk to someone, get them the ear that you need. Because somebody is suffering or has suffered like you are, and they can listen, you know? We're all in this crazy roller coaster together. You're never alone. And there's no such thing as a unique problem. Somebody's been through it or similar. Somebody can listen. Somebody can talk. You're the only one who can help, but you don't have to do it alone. Life's tough, but it's not a single player game. So reach out, get that help. Please do. You make use of the friends that you have. And if the Memorial Tournament has done anything outside of the local region for the Hunter Burton Memorial, it's to bring this to the forefront and bring the issue of mental health in the gaming community to the forefront, which is a very important cause in my mind.
Yes. And Chris said that the proceeds go somewhere important. It's the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.
Yeah.
And for a another personal look at depression and suicidal thoughts and all of that, I did an episode of Imp's Prison with Angelo from the Pit Imps podcast. He had a side show called Imp's Prison for a while. And the last time that I was on there with him, he and I talked deeply and honestly about our struggles with depression. So that's a thing. If you just want an example of other people that you'd never know were depressed, being depressed, then go listen to that. And know that you are not alone. So yay. Well, that was somber.
A bit, yes.
Yeah, but it needed to
be. But extremely important.
Yes. So let's go from somber to hilarious and stupid. The, what was this called? What are these called? The year of modern drafts. Yeah, the year of modern drafts. The last batch of those was Triple Cold Snap. And we have, we have links to two decks that came from that are just stupid. hey, Clues, you just recently looked it up. What is Ripple?
Ripple has you reveal cards. Man, I just looked this up. You reveal cards from the top of your library. I forget if it's Ripple and then a number. I think it's a certain number of cards that you reveal.
They're all four except for the Thrumming Stone.
Yeah, okay. So you reveal the top four cards of your library, and any cards that share a name with the card with Ripple that you just cast, you cast for free.
And if they have Ripple clues?
You Ripple some more.
And what it... Oh, never mind.
So yeah, there are two pictures of draft decks here.
Just look.
One of which has, let's see here. Well, it's got two copies of Surging Sentinels. That's the creature with Ripple 4. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 copies of Surging Might, which is an Aura enchant creature, gets +2/+2 with Ripple 4 in a 40-card deck. Is that all that has Ripple in this deck? I don't remember what Kaldorn Warcry does, but there are freaking 6 of them.
In which case, it actually just doesn't matter.
So Kaldorn Warcry. No, that's creatures you control get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is 1 plus the number of cards named Kaldorn Warcry in all graveyards. Oh, God!
Yeah.
As an instant for 2 mana. I'd forgotten all about that card.
And then you win the game.
Pretty much.
They stack well.
And then the other one, which is a Reddit link, which I'll actually probably get rid of and just put the image link here, is a blue-red deck that has 1 Surging Flame, which is too bad. That's a shock with Ripple 4. But then it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 copies of Surging Aether, which return target permanent to its owner's hand, instant speed, with ripple 4.
I know what you're thinking, and no, it's not non-land permanent. It's permanent.
Those are some nice lands you have there. It'd be a shame if anything happened to
them. I think it's more a case of, your lands are really nice. Why don't you just pick it up and look at it for a few turns?
Bouncy.
So, yeah, these are these are borderline stupid, but that's what happens when you draft triple Cold Snap sometimes, is you get all of the surging spells, and you ripple away until your opponent concedes. So, what's that's that. Those links, like I said, are in the show notes. You should totally check it out if you're at all interested in the hilarity that happens in Triple Cold Snap.
And if you want to jump in on that, you've got till Wednesday morning.
Yes, and I hope I can get this posted tonight so that, you know, that's true.
Yeah.
So, since we're on Magic Online, take it away, the Squee.
All right. There's a lot of stuff here, so I'll sort of fast forward through the repeatable part. Most of this news came from last week, so check out the Magic website. Go to Game Info Products Magic Online for a list of the most current stuff. I assure you, new things are going to be happening this week. Anything I tell you could be obsolete already. So that said, starting with last week's main news, the first main bullet point to mention is that the recent banned and restricted updates go into effect this coming Wednesday. So I guess have fun with that Eldrazi deck for another day and a half, and then have less fun with it. So that's going to go into effect on Wednesday. The new set content comes out on Friday when the pre-release begins. If you got cards that became legal recently, then you can technically play them starting Wednesday when they become legal. It's just weird. Don't worry too much about that. More importantly, they've made some other changes that are going to go into effect very soon and pretty much immediately. So one of the big things that they're going to do is they are adjusting the way that Magic Online replays work. So in the past, and they've done a few different variations on this, but the short version is that you were allowed to watch sort of fast-forwarded replays of other people's games during a Magic tournament, which resulted in a lot of scouting if you were to play in a 16 or so person tournament, because you can more or less figure out who you're going to be matched up against the next game, watch their entire match, or all of their all of their games and all their matches, and pretty much find out what their bombs are, what they're doing, what their strategy is, and then go into that game ready to combat whatever they're doing.
Sounds perfectly fair. Wait.
It was miserable because you were pretty confident your opponents were doing it, so you kind of had to yourself, or you would just get completely one-sided. But on top of that, the way Magic Online works with queues are that you get about 2 minutes from the end of the last match and a round before the next one fires. So in the event that you're playing and you're the last game to wrap up, well, all of your opponents have seen all of your stuff and you haven't seen their stuff. On top of that, it's just kind of miserable because no one really wants to do that. It's boring and it takes a lot of fun out of the game when you've seen your entire opponent's deck. And it also results in scenarios where you don't play your best card, because you don't want people to see it, and so you sort of play the awkward, I'm going to try to beat you without showing it, because it's like giving your opponent your deck list before you play them. You just don't want to do that if you're running a board wipe or something that is critical in it being a surprise. So they're making adjustments, which is, as of the coming downtime on April 13th, players will no longer be able to watch replays of matches or events they did not participate in.
Hey!
So you can only watch your own games now. Which, have fun with that. But yes, you can no longer watch the other ones. And the reason they're doing this isn't for any of the stuff that I said. No. The reason they're doing that is because people were using bots and other programs to watch a vast number of game replays and actually crunch numbers and figure out standard faster, which they have a problem with. So
go ahead and scout as much as you want, but don't you dare figure out how to win games of Magic.
Yeah, I mean, they make it pretty clear here that they think that Magic is at its best before the format is solved. And so all of this process allowing people to solve it faster is against the goal. So this is what they're doing.
I don't disagree. I just think it's kind of funny that that's where they went first and not stopping people from doing something that is, well, it's not technically illegal, I guess, but
it's totally allowed. It's just miserable.
You could never do it in real life.
Your friends can watch games and tell you between rounds.
Sure.
And so, I mean, like, that's just the way that it happens when people play things in public. That said, this is also something that they believe is beneficial because it means that people who use Magic Online to playtest don't have to worry about other people following their games and watching the things they're playtesting. At most, just the person you're playing against will know what you're doing. So there's that.
Huh.
Things I never really thought about in that extent, but that's what they're changing now. I appreciate it because I haven't been all in Magic Online in a long time. In fact, the last time I was really into it was last Innistrad. But I do know that because Innistrad had so many draft archetypes, getting a sense of what your opponents were playing was actually really important. Like if they were playing the Werewolf deck in the old one, you would know to hang on to your really cheap spells because you might need them on turn two or three to flip something back. And you wouldn't know to do that against a completely blind opponent who's just put down one land when it's your turn. So I'm glad that that's no longer a thing. So that's cool. That's a positive change there. Just as a reminder of something that I mentioned a while ago, if you were running Windows XP or Windows Vista, Magic Online will stop working for you on May 4th.
Whoops.
So, sucks to be you. These are no longer being supported. If you're on Vista, you can actually upgrade to Service Pack 2, in which case you'll be supported again. But if you're on Vista SP1 or, God help you, base install, then you do not get to Magic Online. If you're on any version of XP, you do not get to Magic Online. If you're Clues, you do not get to Magic Online.
This is true.
Yeah. But so that's what's going on there. There's a little more technical information if you want to read about it. It's all covered in the announcements. And now I'm going to go on to some happier news. So they've put together a Magic Online events calendar, which you'll probably appreciate if you care at all about Magic Online events. It's exactly what it says. Here's a giant, easy-to-view calendar with dates filled in all throughout for events with links to more information about them. This is really convenient. In fact, after this went up, it became sort of widespread of this is how you're going to find this information now. That you're not going to necessarily be getting reminders all the time of every event because it's all in one place that will be kept up to date. You can actually filter down to different types of events. You can actually identify streamed events, all sorts of stuff located in here. So it's just added to the same calendar that has your premiere events, store run events, and all kinds of stuff. So I appreciate it. I'll probably leave that link in the show notes just as a general reference going forward. So it can just hang out down there. But that's great. Just as a reminder, whenever you're looking through stuff, Magic Online times are done Pacific time. That is something that also comes up often when people not in the Pacific time zone wonder why things aren't firing on time. It's still Pacific, not Eastern, and not anything else. So we got that.
Not that weird half an hour thing in that Lansdale has going on.
Hey, man, yeah. I didn't create it.
Well, I'm glad. Otherwise, I would judge you. I've left in a link from last week about the pre-release event structure because the pre-release is going on this weekend. I encourage people who've never done a Magic Online pre-release and are curious about it. This is a great one to jump in on because you can do the pre-release leagues and not have to actually sit there for 4 hours to play with your sealed deck. You can jump in and out of the league all weekend and still get the same results as people who are just playing straight sealed. So that's pretty awesome. Again, a reminder also, they're not bothering with release events anymore. So once this is over, you can just start getting stuff. That'll be great. They are wrapping up the last Constructed League. So if you're participating in that, make sure you get all of your hours in soon, because this week's downtime is going to turn that off. So go forth with that. In fact, they're actually going to be, speaking of leagues, they're going to be doing some new stuff, which is finally hitting the other thing that people like about leagues. So for people not familiar with leagues, the basic idea is, hey, cool, you've, like, at least sealed leagues, you've made a deck. Great, you can keep playing with that deck for a while. One of the things that's nice, though, is that typically in every league I've ever seen outside of Magic Online, over time you would be allowed to get another pack and add it to your pool and then, you know, rebuild as needed. And that kept things fresh over the course of a potentially multi-month league. Well, Magic Online is now going to allow you to do that. So they're going to have multi-stage leagues, and they will allow, they've actually split it up so that you only play against people within your stage. So it's not like if you just jump in, you have to worry about going up against the person who's had more packs than you. You are not required to buy more packs than the starting ones, but you will eventually be paired against people who have. So that's something to keep in mind. You can use your own boosters. You can use event tickets. You can use play points, but ultimately you'll start out with your pool. And then after you've played a certain number of games, or a certain number of rounds, matches, whatever the term is, you'll be able to add to your pool and then continue on until you wrap up the league. The first one of these will begin on Monday, April 18th. So that'll be at the conclusion of the pre-release this weekend. So I think that's pretty neat and would recommend people probably check that one out too, because leagues are actually probably the ideal way to play Magic Online if you're someone who has other stuff to do in their life. One of the most intimidating things about Magic Online is having to block out several hours, which for someone who has a lot of stuff going on is just not feasible. Magic Online caters to people who don't always have the ability to get out to a store, but if you've only got one free hour a day, it's not going to be very useful if you're doing anything but playing pickup constructed games. So this is another way to do that. I'm glad they're going that direction. The link I've got in the show notes explains the cost, the rewards, all that stuff. So definitely check that out. Also, if you're interested in Magic Online for the first time, they put together a Getting Started with MTGO link here, which I won't go into much detail on, but it's another useful resource giving you links to here's where you download it. Here's how you can sign up to get your account. Here's a video showing you how to actually use the interface. Something worthwhile. Now that they've added all of these features to make Magic Online a bit more appealing, hopefully that actually helps out a bit. So, and finally, Legacy Cube goes away this week because they're going to be going into the pre-release mode. So Legacy Cube goes away. And likewise, the Year of Modern is going to be on break. So after we've had the next, I don't know, 36 hours of doing hilarious things with Ripple, it's going to go away, and it won't be back until May 4th when it's Triple Time Spiral, and you can enjoy all the wonders of as many keywords as your brain can handle outside of playing Cube.
Good Lord. And it just gets worse when the rest of the sets in the blocks show up.
Yeah, as that goes on, it gets weirder and weirder. And then you can have the experience of getting that Tarmogoyf and realizing it's not actually all that great and limited.
But Bill, goy.
You should still take it. And then you can watch the internet explode.
I mean, it's definitely better than Burst Lightning, right?
I mean, you know, depending on your deck. I would trade you a Burst Lightning for one.
No, you wouldn't, sir.
I don't know. I don't like green that much. And that'll be that for this week's Magic Online news. There's a bunch of links in here. Read ahead if you're interested. And if you're still on Windows XP or Vista, sorry, you're going to have to probably move along. Ugh.
Move along.
Too bad.
Move along.
All right, then. So, yay, Magic Online stuff.
Hoorah.
Which leaves us with nothing.
Nothing.
Hooray.
So, gentlemen, do we have anything that we need to do here at the end of all things? Well, the end of this thing.
So I was in a store earlier picking up a big card box to store all of these cards that for some reason I keep buying. And I noticed that they had pre-release packs still sitting out to be purchased. And that's pretty awesome because they were $25. So if I was going to buy six packs anyway, well, for a dollar, I get a neat little Tamiyo box and a spin down I don't care about and a random foil nonsense. So I decided, hey, this is actually an EV game I might actually be able to win at, because all I have to do is get a fancy promo pre-release foil worth more than a dollar. What do you think, Luz?
I'd put your chances at, let's say, 50-50.
That's where I was going to go, yeah.
All right, let's find out. Box open. Card is Deathcap Cultivator.
I don't even know.
That's the one that taps for green or black. Oh. And it gets Death Touch if you have Delirium.
I'm pretty sure that's like a $2 or $3 foil.
Yeah. Get there.
Success!
Go team. Honestly, I did it because I like the Tamiyo deck boxes.
They're pretty neat. All right.
And so that's that, I guess, wandering to sign out stuff.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I will begin then. So you can follow me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinToBob. There's no I in Goblin because I'm pretty sure all of those human decks got away with it, and I'm not going to be bothered to hunt them down. There's too many of them. I can't find it. We practically skipped to 30 seconds, so nah, they can have my eye. It's cool.
Yep.
That said, be on Twitter. You can go to enchantworld.com and submit stories. I'm collecting pre-release stories. Given the daily MTG page also collects pre-release stories, I have a feeling this might not work out as well as I thought it would. But if you have pre-release stories, send them to me. It'll be great. I would like to, in the long run, try to get at least one or two stories from each pre-release for a few years and then just do like a, you know, standard in review of the excitement that everyone had at the beginning of each set. So if anyone's interested in recording stuff for that too and you don't mind waiting a year and a half, that might be a lot of fun. But yeah, if you want to submit and you're using a computer which has Flash capabilities, you can go to enchantworld.com and then go to submissions and then just directly record it right there in the browser. If you're using a phone or something else that doesn't want to play with Flash, that's fine. Just record an audio file and send it to planeswalker.squee@gmail.com, and that'll get to me no problem as well. And then I will edit accordingly. So, and that's the bulk of what I've got going on. So go get Clues.
Okay, well, you can find me a variety of places. You can, of course, find me on the, well, okay, so it's now called the Random Discard Podcast. It used to be called the Card Advantage Podcast. We are in the process of changing our name, so in the future, it will all be Random Discard. But for now, you can still find us in all of the old places. So cardadvantagecast.com, as well as just right here on the MTG Cast Network. You can totally find it there. We had a really nice discussion last week about the reserved list. I recommend everybody check that out if you're curious about the reserved list, or if you have these delusions that, hey, new president of WotC means he's totally going to get rid of the reserved list. Spoiler alert. No, he's not. That's not going to happen. But listen. Yeah, sorry, man. Listen to the show. You'll see why.
But maybe?
No. Yeah.
But what if?
Nope.
Oh.
Totally not. But there you go. Keep on dreaming is what we're saying. If you want to get a hold of me directly, you can do that. I am at LockLuze, spelled just like it is in the show notes. And I think that's it. Take it away, Chris.
So you can find me each and every Monday on StarCityGames.com on the free side, because my words should be free to read for the masses, and because I'm not good enough to charge. I generally write about sort of at the junction between competitive and casual, the kind of person who goes to F&M with a deck that wants to have fun but still have a chance at winning. Good fun stuff, and it's full of puns and dated 90s Saturday morning cartoon references, so I don't see how you could possibly go wrong, really.
This is also the man who, in a Star City newsletter, said you should be running Intrepid Hero a good 2-3 weeks before anyone had any Intrepid Heroes in their sideboard.
That was me, wasn't it?
That was you, yeah. Because of the Eldrazi Menace, in case you're going, why would anyone play it? Because of the Eldrazi. And Bill is opening his packs.
Also,
how could I not?
In my in my efforts to just continually play cards that Chewy comically pronounces funny on the Mana Pool, this week at FNM, I took a break from playing the Nourishing Shoal deck, which contains what card is that, Chewy?
Nourishing Shoal deck contains...
So I figured instead of doing that, I'd play a deck that wants to generate approximately 9 mana, casting 4 or more spells in a single turn in order to cast a spell that fetches a certain red flying creature. Which would be... Chewy, you're missing your cues, man.
I'm trying to think of something else I say funny, and I was only half listening to what you said.
Or you could just read the show notes.
Read the show notes. Dagron Storm?
This show has notes.
I don't say that.
You do say Dagrons.
I say Dagrons, but I don't think I ever said Dagron Storm. That doesn't roll very well. But you can get all the Dagrons!
Well, you only need 4, but...
Well, that's true, yeah.
The bonus to playing this this deck right now is that you get to do a Khaleesi impression and ask where your dragons are, and then show your opponent that you actually found them, and then kill them.
I don't get that joke.
Okay. Well, maybe you should watch Game of Thrones while eating garlic bread, you ginger-headed heathen.
I don't watch Game of Thrones.
What is wrong with you?
It did not
interest me. He doesn't have HBO.
I do have HBO. I just don't have cable.
I'm giving you an out.
No, I don't need an out. I had no interest in Game of Thrones, so I didn't watch it.
No, that's valid.
you know there are beautiful ladies in this show, right?
You know he has the internet, right?
Thank you, Bill.
The internet is really, really great for deck lists.
And for podcasts.
But yeah, I've been playing Dagron Storm in Modern. It's fun. Probably still going back to Nourishing Shoal because it's funner. Although, I know Clues is a fan of the legacy deck known as Cheerios.
I am, yes.
Did you know that in Modern, there is a deck that used to be called Cheerios? But I'm campaigning to call it Grape Knots instead, because I'll tell you why in a moment. This deck runs 4 Pure Steel Paladin, approximately 24 zero casting cost equipment.
Right, yes. Okay, go on.
4 copies of Retract. And Grape Shot. So you go, Pure Steel Paladin, equipment, draw 20 cards. Retract! Equipment, kill you. It's dumb.
I approve.
But hilarious. It does run blue cards, though.
Yeah, well, sometimes you have to.
The deck is very silly. It is capable of winning turn 2. It is a little fragile, although if you equip all your kite shields and a quarter shields to your Pure Steel Paladin, it's not dying to a lightning bolt. Ever.
Unless that lightning bolt has Death Touch, I don't think they've made that card yet.
The deck is hilarious. It gets to play Muddle the Mixture, which is fun. You also get to play Myth Realized if you want to. So, yeah. Modern has some really crazy things you can do. So, yeah, in closing, play fun cards, screw Flanders, take it away, Chewy.
Yay! I'm Chewy. Right.
Dark.
You can find me, of course, every week over on The Mana Pool, which you can find at themanapool.com, where last week we did our live pre-release episode, as has become tradition, where you got to hear all about the guys doing well and me doing not so well. And yeah, so that was fun. The week before that was a bit of a weird episode. Got a lot of reaction out of it. I'm not sure what. It was a clip show. Because, you know, if a show goes long enough, then we always... what was I trying to say? If a show goes long enough, surely it will do a clip show eventually.
I just want to know when you're jumping the sharks.
I don't think we're allowed. I think insurance reasons.
Okay.
Yeah, because I asked. Also, depending on who you ask, we did that a long time ago. But over on the YouTube channel, I started the Battle for Zendikar story just days before the next update was released. So in the next video that has been recorded but not edited and posted, I finished off the Battle for Zendikar storyline, which means now I can start the new stuff as soon as I'm able. The beast, the new computer, records duels so smoothly that I actually want to play duels. Like, it records duels better than the laptop played it without recording it. Like, duels was always kind of painful for me on a lower end system. But now that I have a computer that is meant for this sort of thing, it's so pretty. Things move smoothly. I don't feel like I'm grinding my teeth constantly. It's so nice. So yeah. But that's fun. In Hearthstone news, I have started Heroic Blackrock Mountain, the second of the solo adventures. Started that. It's the video's done and ready to upload, but I have to post this show and then I have to go to bed because I'm driving all day again tomorrow. So it'll be up hopefully tomorrow night, maybe. I said all I gotta do is upload it and do the hours worth of work that comes after the upload, but I don't have time to do that tonight. And I didn't have time last night because I had to drive all day today. So I'm very sorry. I got a week without driving, which means now this week they're gonna kill me. I've already got one today, one tomorrow, and they've lined two up on Thursday for me. So isn't that sweet of them? But it pays, you know, the power bill and the internet bill, which is, I think, the most important one. Yeah. But anyway, lots of things coming up on the YouTube channel. I'm very excited. What else? Yeah, I guess that's it. Hey, do you guys like the oaths? The oath cards?
Like, yeah, they're interesting.
The new ones?
I do. Okay. I like the vessels too.
Cause I think that's gonna be what we do on the new mana pool recorded later this week. We're gonna make up some oaths for other planeswalkers. It'll be fun.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
Yeah. I look forward to the black ones.
Yeah, I think I'm going to focus more on flavor text than on the actual card. But anyway, so that's just a small preview of things to come. That's what we're doing this week. And I will shut up now. So you can follow me on Twitter at the Mana Pool. You can send me an email to Chewy, that's Chewie, at mtgcast.com. You can check out the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/c/themanapool. And if you want to help support what I do with all of these podcasts and videos, or if you want to get some behind-the-scenes stuff and listen to Clue Swear, then you can check out my Patreon, where every little bit helps. And I really do appreciate it. It is patreon.com/themanapool. Now, if you want to help support magic podcasting in general, but not me specifically, that's perfectly understandable, and you can go to mtgcast.com and check out the Support MTGcast button, where it's right there on the homepage. Because while MTGcast is completely free for all of you listeners and free for all of these podcasters, it's not actually free. And bringing you that insane amount of content every week or every day actually costs a fair amount of money. So, yeah. Go sign up there to give MTGcast a little bit of help and get things back in the black. Is that everything? I think it's everything. Chris is at Len's Delicious on Twitter, by the way.
I am.
I don't remember if you said that, so I figured I'd throw it in there.
Probably not. However, remember that if too many llamas get together in one place, it's a sign of apocalypse.
Apparently he hates you.
It's a sign of the apocalypse.
Oh, that's why I hate you. Okay.
That would be it.
Right, so we're going to put this episode down. So, this has been episode 508 of Monday Night Magic. Thank you, Chris, for joining us.
Anytime.
And thank... What else? Oh, and thank you all so very much for listening. And go play some magic.